This is Mark Levine signing off.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You know, it's kind of a double-edged sword producing Mark Levine. It's the hour before this program begins, and so you'd like to, you know, you want to focus on getting your own show ready. But when Mark, you know, what you just heard was an hour of Mark Levine at his very, I think, best. Handling a story that is, to say the least, Byzantine and complex and making it comprehensible for anybody. You don't have to, now that you've heard it, you don't have to be a lawyer to figure out how sleazy, how dirty, how unutterably filthy Karl Rove and George Bush and his whole sick, twisted cabal are, and the ends to which they will go to get retribution against anyone who crosses their path. And really, it also it highlights something else, the Siegelman story. And we will get to that in due time. However, we must attend to the things which, form the core of our programming. This isn't just any day. No. This is Wednesday, the 12th day of March. A couple of days in front of the Ides of March. Beware the Ides of March and all that good hoopla. But it's Wednesday, and you know what Wednesday means.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest. he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, glory, yeah, verily. Hallelujah. It's prayer meeting night right here on Head On with Bob Kincaid. I am Bishop Bob Kincaid, your spiritual advisor. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense. Ho! Oh! Come on down the aisle, get your magic cracker, lay your hands upon the subwoofer, and feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through your body and bringing you healing. Hallelujah! Yahoo!
Okay. So, yeah. How's that for a transition? A couple of stories here that we will get to fairly immediately, what with it being prayer meeting night and everything. But I think the Spitzer matter, and the Siegelman matter, for that matter, fall under the general rubric of an appropriate topic for prayer meeting. But I'm not concerned with the more salacious aspects of the Spitzer case. I'm concerned, well, you know me, I listen for the music that happens between the notes. And the Spitzer case, well, it speaks a mouthful, doesn't it? Here's a paragraph now from earlier today.
Spitzer and his family, meanwhile, remained secluded in their Fifth Avenue apartment, while Republicans began talking impeachment and few, if any, fellow Democrats came forward to defend him.
I read that sentence and I just got a little sick in the back of my throat. You know what I mean? Few, if any, Democrats came forward to defend him. By God, if they were Democrats, they would have surrounded Elliot Spitzer and they would have looked at all the miserable, hung up, kinked up, funked up, godforsaken repig lickens and said, "All right, you want to talk about impeachment? We'll talk about impeachment. We can talk about impeachment all day long. And we will start the conversation immediately after we have found out about every weird little kink you filthy repiglicans engage in. After we've found out about your chaps and your butt plugs and your rubber harnesses and your head masks and your chains and your dildos and your mistresses and your diapers. After we've found out every last little bit about that, because you are, after all, repiglicans, and we know the kind of sex you people like to have. Once we've been through all of that, we'll start talking about impeaching the governor." But no.
Few, if any, fellow Democrats came forward to defend him.
Defend him from what? Defending him from having to go to a hooker to engage in sexual practices that his wife either was unwilling or unaware of? Honey, would you spank me a little bit?
Ew! That's gross!
Could I tie you up?
Well, no. It ruined my tan.
One of these days... No, we're not. No, there's no one of these days part of this conversation.
The American people are never going to get unkinked and unhinked about sex. The American people like it dirty and on the sly, baby. All these politicians who run away from what they are. Was Elliot Spitzer a good attorney general for 8 years in New York when he was taking down insurance companies and laying about him with an axe handle and doing God's work against the filthy, rapacious corporate interests that make middle-class and lower-class life a living hell? Was he a good man then? Well, if he was, there's every chance in the world that at the same time, he still liked a little spanking. Or to do some spanking. He liked pushing the sexual envelope. And you know what? As long as the other side of that equation was consenting, more power to him. Ain't none of my business. Now, the other side of the Spitzer affair, however, is that hypocrisy enters into the equation. Because I apply the same standard to a Democrat that I do to a Republican, a Republican. I'm sure that there are some members of the GOP out there whose sexual peccadilloes probably do involve pigs, or chickens, or sheep. Or cattle, or lizards, or gerbils. In that case, you know, no, not so much, because you can't get consent from the animals. But Spitzer's career did involve the prosecution of prostitution rings. And that does put a whiff of hypocrisy into the air around him. Because it makes it possible to argue, do as I say and not as I do. On the other hand, have you seen his wife? Silda, I believe, is her name. She looks like Jennifer Aniston's older sister. But I submit to you that when a man and a woman are married, or a man and a man, or a woman and a woman, and those two people cannot sit down together and talk openly and honestly about their sexual coexistence, they don't have much of a marriage. They may have all the money in the world. They may have fine cars, fancy clothing, and go to all the best restaurants and soirees. But at the end of the day, when they get all naked, if they can't be happy in their own skins and with the skin of the person they're next to, it's something, but it ain't a marriage. And there's tremendous variety in the world of sex. And if two adults consent to it, I don't have a problem with it. I also don't have any interest in knowing what it is. Neither do I wish to see it or hear it or smell it. Or apply any of my senses to it. Because it ain't none of my business. If, however, you go about the land and you hosanna about declaiming on how good and godly and upright you are and condemn others for doing conduct which you yourself are engaged in, then it's okay to take the big white hot spotlight and come on down. Put it right on them. But that's not what this is about. I think it is a sad commentary on the sexual health and the sexual well-being of the American people, and it ain't very, if you know what I mean. I mean, imagine you're committed to somebody else in your life, and you can't share something as innocent and innocuous as a sexual kink in the bedroom that will stay between the two of you. That's pathetic. Because heaven only knows how much you both, because, you know, what you give, you gotta get. He wants her to do something, he's got to do something for her. And you both wind up the better in the end. And you wind up closer. But we don't have that kind of an understanding of the commitments of marriage in this country, for the most part. No, this is not what that's about. Or this is not my focus this evening. My focus instead is, and Republicans began talking impeachment. Really? Did they? The Republicans began talking impeachment. And now Eliot Spitzer has resigned. Because Republicans began talking impeachment. They began talking about impeachment on something which they had no business in whatsoever. To the same extent that I argue that the government has no business listening to our phone calls or looking at our emails or any of our other private communications, because they are private, because they are cherished interpersonal interactions, I apply that same standard here as well. How is hiring a hooker, even if she took the train to D.C., how is that any business of the Repig-Lickin Party in the Empire State? I'll defend Eliot Spitzer. I don't have any problem at all defending Eliot Spitzer. Unfortunately, a bunch of gutless Democrats do have a problem doing that. And more's the pity. But they began talking impeachment, and Eliot Spitzer realized it was time to shuffle off to Buffalo, as the saying goes. And of course, if you listened, as I said, if you listened to the previous hour with Mark Levine talking with Scott Horton of Harper's Magazine, you heard Mark Levine at his very best, bringing out information about political skullduggery and political slime and political sleaze that, frankly, you can't get on any other talk radio program, because nobody else does conversation radio like we do. How many breaks would there have been in the conversation? Hey, Scott, hold that idea. Okay, just hold that thought, and we'll be right back after we bring you some messages about Swedish bowling balls that pick up erection remedies. And buy gold now. You couldn't. It's much more difficult to get the gist of something that way. But if you listened to Mark, you heard Mark and Scott Horton bring forth stories of federal judges and attorneys general who utterly defamed and demeaned their offices in order to accomplish purely political, personal vendettas on behalf of that sleaziest political animal that is presently breathing in the United States of America, Karl Rove. And there is a dovetailing to both of the stories. Eliot Spitzer had a target painted on his back. Eliot Spitzer's story began when somebody picked up the phone at the bank and dropped the dime on him to the FBI because of wire transfers of money within his accounts. Uh-huh. And they followed those, and they bugged his phones, and they read his emails, and everything. Because they thought they had, bank dropping dime on Spitzer, Spitzer had gone after banks. Spitzer had gone after investment firms. Spitzer had gone after insurance firms. Spitzer had, as I said, gone after all of the big money institutions that make life a living hell for the middle and lower classes in this country. He was a marked man. And they thought, he's taking bribes. We've got him now. Now we'll see how the golden boy looks after we've muddied him up real good. It turns out he was paying a hooker to spank him. Which, as far as the banks, the Wall Street Journal, the insurance houses, the investment houses, and so forth in New York are concerned, was even better.
Because it's dirty.
Now, granted, they engage in financial shenanigans that destroy families, homes, communities. And it's all straight out of The Godfather.
Tell Michael I always liked him. It was only business.
But sex, in hung-up, hinked-up, kinked-up, puritanical America,
that's dirty.
And Republicans were talking impeachment. Oddly enough, however, there's not a lot of talk of impeachment of an obviously dirty federal judge in Alabama who flouted the canons of judicial ethics in order to achieve the satisfaction of a personal political vendetta against Don Siegelman. Listen in the House of Representatives, where impeachment proceedings would begin against a federal judge with a lifetime appointment. Hear the crickets? And moreover, when I read
Republicans were talking about impeachment,
I think about Nancy Pelosi and her damnable table. I think about Nancy Pelosi, who by her inaction guarantees the death of more and more and more and more and more and more and more soldiers and sailors and Marines and airmen and women in a completely unjust, immoral, and, this is important here, illegal occupation of Iraq. I think about Nancy Pelosi and how impeachment is off the table. Jesus, the details about Elliot Spitzer weren't even out yet, and Republicans in New York were talking about impeachment. Meanwhile, the blood flows. The graves can't be dug fast enough for civilians in Iraq. And Nancy Pelosi sits with her pince-nez glasses halfway down the bridge of her nose, working on her knitting in her rocking chair and saying, impeachment is off the table, impeachment is off the table, impeachment is off the table. You want to know who's laughing the hardest out of all of this? You want to know who's laughing his ass off about Don Siegelman? You want to know who's laughing till his ribs ache about Elliot Spitzer? George W. Bush has tears running from his eyes. He's laughing so hard. And yeah, he's laughing at Nancy Pelosi. And he's laughing at Harry Reid. But you know who he's laughing hardest at? He's laughing hardest at you and me and every American who hasn't gone to Washington, D.C. and lived in the damn streets until he was removed peacefully and legally from office. There's talk of charging, the U.S. Attorney for New York, who is one of those, Bush creatures, with the news of the resignation, said, no deal has been made with this office. For prosecution of Elliot Spitzer is not foreclosed. Prosecution under the Mann Act. The Mann Act has been one of the most hateful pieces of legislation in terms of its availability for use against political malcontents. That this country has ever seen. The Mann Act says that it is a felony, a federal felony, to transport a female across state lines for immoral purposes. You know the old joke. The punchline is he was arrested for transporting gulls across state lines for immoral purposes. Yeah, it's a chestnut. Let's see. Mann Act prosecutions. Jack Johnson, great American boxer, also happened to be black. Also happened to have a proclivity for marrying up, or at least shacking up, with white women. He was such a threat to the American sporting world that finding someone who could defeat Jack Johnson, that person was referred to for the first, and this is, that's how this phrase entered the American lexicon, as the Great White Hope. He was ruined with the Mann Act. Charlie Chaplin. A lot of this is detailed over at Will Bunch's Attitude. Good writer. J. Edgar Hoover referred to Charlie Chaplin as a parlor Bolsheviki and tried to use the Mann Act to get Charlie Chaplin. The Mann Act was used to take down Chuck Berry. And it may very well be used to take down Elliot Spitzer. In each of those incidents, the Mann Act was used to take down a male individual in this country, frequently of the wrong skin color, if you know what I mean, who was proving to be painful or at least annoying to white American power structures. As Will Bunch notes, at the time he was taken down, Chuck Berry was actually succeeding on his own terms. Jack Johnson was who Jack Johnson was. There's no getting around what a thorn in the side of white bread America he was. And Charlie Chaplin made America laugh, but he also made them think. And now, perhaps, Elliot Spitzer, who had the temerity to cross and whip the asses of some of America's filthiest people. Wall Street bankers, investment houses, insurance scammers. But in the end, he made the fundamental mistake of not being able to hide from his peccadillos and foibles until he had done with his fight. And now he has also quit without one, because no one would stand with him. And like I said, George W. Bush is laughing his ass off. And it makes me, it makes me just a little bit sick. And we know, of course, that George Bush, even despite news reports out today, it's official, McClatchy newspapers, it's official. I mean, it's been exhaustively researched now, and the obvious has finally been stated in unequivocal form that there was no connection between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda whatsoever. That to the extent al-Qaeda is in Iraq, al-Qaeda is in Iraq because George Bush went to Iraq. Still, despite his repeated statements to the American people to the contrary, Nancy Pelosi still has the Afghan over her lap and the pince-nez glasses down around her nose, and she continues to rock, and the knitting needles click and clack, and knit one and purl two, and impeachment is off the table. Impeachment is off the table. One simply doesn't know what it would take to put impeachment. On the table. Right? Yeah. So we'll take a quick break and we'll come back. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice from time to time. This is The Horn. Jump right in with your thoughts, your complaints, your stories. 304-658-3333 on your own nickel, on our nickel, 877-443-2366. This is The Horn. Sometimes, welcome back. Yeah, where'd you go? Sometimes I just need a little break. I get really disgusted with things like this Spitzer business, simply because it so thoroughly proves the absence of character, not of the individual who was caught in a sex scandal, but the absence of character of the American people and the American electorate. Why? Because it shows we're so shallow as to think that a person's conduct in the bedroom is somehow a barometer of that person's ability to do a job. And I guess I'm just weird because porn doesn't do it for me. I don't get a charge out of... Now look, I've owned my fair share of Playboy magazines. And some of those photographs are stunning because I adore the female form. I just do. And it's gorgeous, it's gorgeous work of its sort. And I don't think of it in terms of, you know, using or being used or exploiting or I just go, damn, she's purty. Sure do got a purty mouth. No, we're not going there. We're just not going there. But how a this is the leeching over of the bigotry against, among other people, the gay community into the straight community. Because forever and anon, gay people have had to put up with the idea that because of how you have sex and with whom, that's some sort of a judgment upon your general overall competence as a human being, which it ain't. And that just bugs the crap out of me. We really do... There is a sort of compartmentalization of our lives. Because if there's not... Well, if there isn't, one would expect to see a lot more spontaneous masturbation in the streets, frankly. Trying to hail a cab, and the cabbie's just kind of busy for the minute. And, you know, some of that does go on. I remember the judge who was, you know, had his Swedish pump under his robes.
And those people, you know, they need a little help. They need a help. They need some help with a compulsive disorder, not a sex disorder. And I realize that I'm verging way, way over out of my whatever my expertise is. I'm out of it, and I'm well on the road to the land that is best trod by horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. But really, you know. What does how Joe the plumber has sex have to do, or with whom, have to do with how Joe the plumber does plumbing? Or an electrician? Or an auto mechanic? Or a customer service rep? Or an insurance salesman? On the other hand, when it comes to hypocrisy, you know that if you want to find it, the best place to start looking is in the general registry of the voting, the voter registration of the Republican Party. Right? Right. But it's little things like this that tell me, or take me to a very, very dim and grim and pessimistic place about any hope for America, any hope for enlightenment, or going to that place that some you know, prognosticators of the future talk about, where, you know, we advance with our big brains and we make certain realizations about the nature of our existence. And no, no. Because at the end of the day, when it comes right down to it, at every opportunity to sink to the lowest possible level, we will concern ourselves with who's getting what and how much and how often and how. Because apparently most of us, at least those who are obsessed with finding out other people's sexual habits, are miserably unhappy with their own. I mean, honestly, can you imagine... Do you even want to imagine what sex is like in Carl Rove or Ken Starr's bedroom? I don't even want to watch pretty people have sex. Because I guess I just don't have the wiring for it. But we'll get away from that, because there is a lot of... other stuff going on that's worth talking about this evening, but right now we will go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Well, you've got Kate, but...
Well, hey, Kate.
I've got a shitty segue, huh? I don't even know where to start.
Well, no, I'm sorry. That's so amorphous. No, I don't know if we can have a conversation about that, because it's all
we're
private.
We're not going to.
It's all private.
We're not going to.
You know what? That's fine by me.
I'm grateful that you brought up Mark's show. I was working and didn't get a chance to listen, so now I'm going to go to the archive. I've been asking the question for weeks and weeks and weeks. Where is Henry Kissinger? Where is Karl Rove? Where is Richard Pearl, Richard Clark, all those, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's come out, by the way, Kate, that Karl Rove is... And you got to hang your two fingers up in the air and make the air quotes, informally advising John McCain.
Well, I sort of knew that, but I wonder how informal it is. And as soon as I saw the sister story one the morning, I woke up and saw it on the computer screen. I thought, oh damn, he got burned. I wonder where Karl Rove's at with all this. And then, and I've been talking about it, and people go,
dig far enough, and you'll find it. Karl Rove's cloven little hoof prints in the dirt of this story.
Right, right. And somebody on the inside the other day said and his lieutenant governor is a Hillary supporter, and oh well.
Well, but so was he.
But she needed him out of the way. Okay, never mind. Anyway. I've been sitting here thinking for about 2 days about, I just need a what's the rule? Like if one person speaks, it's for a males and who don't?
Yeah, that's something I heard a million years ago, that for every one person who calls a talk radio show, there are 1,000 people who start quivering at the minute at the thought of touching the phone. Yeah.
Oh, like, oh, God, I might call in, too? Yeah, okay, whatever. So I guess I just like to speak maybe for the 1,000 who are podcasting or streaming or their phone. They don't have any phone minutes, or they're direct dial-up people like I was, and, you know, they're just old enough. I could never call and listen at the same time. Or if they're mic shy, which, you know, get over it. Get over it.
Yeah, but that part is a very, very real thing, Kate.
I know it is.
Because, you know, on that list from a few years back of the top 10 fears of the average American,
mm-hmm.
Death was like number 8, and speaking in public was number 2.
Yeah, well, I've been ruined, so whatever. What's it called when the beginning of the show, is it the hook or the opener, the talking point? The
monologue, what an opening, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Well, I've been noticing something that's making me squirm a little bit. No, quite a bit sometimes. And a little bit of background here. My undergraduate school was Evergreen College in Tacoma, the urban campus, and we were an Afrocentric village concept. And whenever we had, like, for instance, our founder gave Jimi Hendrix his first electric guitar to make him do his homework in grade school. So,
oh, wow.
I mean, she was, yeah, very cool, Dr. Mims. And whenever we had visiting scholars from all over the world, literally, and or peer presentations that we worked very hard to collaborate on, and, you know, exquisite presentations, that we, after the presentation of the person in the front of the room, we always vocally honored them with a thank you and gratitude, and explained briefly what the presentation meant to us, or what it brought to us, or newness, or an uncomfortable, or more questions, or, you know. And I just, like, sometimes, like, please, sometimes you...
You're struggling, aren't you?
Well, no, I just kind of, not trying to follow the chickens here, but sometimes you present ideas and concepts, and we need to debate or quietly ponder and expound on, you know? Did that click mean I'm hanging up here?
No, I didn't hear a click.
Okay, well, I did. Well, it clicked here. Anyway, and I know that you do hours of preparation, and you have an impressive amount of energy that you expend on a topic. And sometimes when I'm preparing a presentation, I do like weeks or days of research or hours, you know, and I give the presentation with passion and enthusiasm, and I'm always brought up short and slammed against the wall when somebody comes back out of the ozone with, you know, like, instead of responding directly to what I said, like, oh, was that a yellow 57 Chevy convertible? You know, like, bam, right up, like, what the hell am I standing here for?
Yeah, I know.
What did I just say? And so I guess a lot of times folks jump into the middle of the stream without careful consideration or without honoring. I mean, maybe they don't want to talk about the freaking Iranian problem, whatever. But maybe they could just say, thank you for that, and would you mind if we change the subject, or whatever, you know? But, I mean, just to like, jump in the middle of the stream and, like, I hate to respond to Mark's show because I wasn't listening to it.
Yeah.
You know, I can just come in with all my own ideas, and I can expound on yada yada and go blah blah, and it didn't have a thing to do with Mark's show because I wasn't there. You know, I need to go in order to talk about him with any kind of intelligence or any kind of clarity. I need to go listen to the show, and then I can talk about it. You know, but it just gets me crazy, I guess, when sometimes you don't get the kind of honoring for the amount of energy and preparation that you do for the subject that you lead with. And it's very cool that when people come in the middle of the show, or maybe late, and they introduce new subjects that like you've already got them in the facts and say, yeah, we were going to talk about that, and then you go along, you know, you two talk about it. And or subjects even from past shows, like I'm doing right now, well, not tech, not literally, but I guess I'm just talking about my discomfort with the fact that you and Peter, for two, don't get enough honoring, or people don't pay enough attention to what you're saying. They just jump in. I mean, I've done it too, and I always feel bad about it after I hang up. I think, well, damn, I didn't even say nothing about what we were talking about, you know. So I just want to say, you know, maybe, why don't you just say something like, when you answer the call, so like, what are your ideas about living on the brink of destruction, or, you know, how are you feeling about not being able to afford gas and sweet food in the near future? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, Kate. And
I guess it's just about keeping the energy focused.
Yeah, well, or, you know, as the saying, keeping our eye on the ball.
Well, and like, lest I be perceived as the bitch boss of the universe, I just, you know, please note that I'm aware that this is conversation radio. People can say whatever the hell they want.
And that's, you know, that's the dynamic tension of what we're working with here. Because
yeah.
what I despise in talk radio is the host-centric thing, Kate, where somebody calls in and says, you know, Megadiddos, Rush, I think you're right, spot on. And, that's right, my friend. And then that's just an opening for a monologue.
I find that disgusting. It's not what we do here.
But the opposite of it is that if we are on a topic, suddenly shifting gears is sometimes a bit jarring. Not so much for me, because I pride myself on the fact that, you know, I have a clutchless transmission and I can shift gears at a moment's notice.
I never did use a clutch. You got to do it by the RPM.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's the mark of a driver. But I know what you're saying.
And we've got to find where that
medium is, that mean, if you will, between you know, just the hosts babbling on and using every phone call as an opportunity to self promote, and having real dialogue and discussion. And it's the real dialogue and discussion end that I want to default to.
Yes. And in the middle of that, where this topic for me is coming from, I mean, where the niggling feeling that I'm having is that the topic drift feels slightly insulting. And at least when we call in, we could touch on the subject and give you and honor you for the amount of prep and energy that you're putting into that particular topic or that particular show. Or call in and say, this show sucks. You didn't, you know, what have you been doing? You slept until 2, didn't you? You know what I mean?
you're a bad today. Influence. I'm looking at the chat room, and Peter Godbold just wrote in, hosts should be kept in the basement with the lotion.
Peter, go back to your room. Go put on your wolf.
It puts the lotion on its skin, and then it rubs the lotion in. I can make your life a living hell.
Speaking of lotion on the skin, I want to revert back to a... Thank you, Peter, for your response. I appreciate it. Somebody's listening. I wanted to touch on something that you... I can't remember when it was, maybe yesterday. You were talking about... the toxicity of the soldiers coming home, and you touched on BU, and I wanted to talk about the fact that in addition to the damage that it obviously does, that it gets into the clothing in microscopic particles, gets into the clothing and the gear and little grains of sand that won't ever come out. I mean, it's just everywhere. I mean, you can take showers, but it doesn't come off. But most particularly, the haunting story I heard was from Joyce Riley about 2 or 3 years ago, when she was talking about the soldiers who were coming home with their with little particles of sand and stuff in their gear. You come in and your moms and dads come in and dump the duffel in the middle of the floor, and the kids start crawling all over it, and it stays that way for weeks. And the microscopic, the little undetectable, it just takes one undetectable microscopic amount of DU to lodge in the lung of one of the family members, and it causes hideous cancer.
Yeah. And the thing I was trying to delineate is that it's not necessarily the radioactive part of it, it's the heavy metal part of it. And tiny trace elements of heavy metals are sufficient to cause tremendous bodily harm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what DU is. No matter how unradioactive it becomes, at the end of the day, it is still an incredibly toxic heavy metal.
Well, Captain Riley was talking about the radioactivity, and it's just causing tremendous amounts of unknown damage to the population of the soldiers and the people they come in contact with. You know, I mean.
Well, we first found out about this when the 10th Mountain Division out of New York was deployed to Iraq and rotated home, and they were urinating blood.
Mm-hmm.
For no good reason.
Yeah.
And as a consequence of that, they started doing testing, and they had heavy metals and radiation in places where they ought not, and at concentrations that were far above anything that were considered to be normal under any circumstance, military or otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the study of, I can't remember if it was Bush War II or Bush War I, the veterans from Mississippi who came home, and they followed up, and the ones who fathered children.
I was just going to say that.
Flipper babies, all of them. I mean, like 99%. There was something wrong with 99%.
Birth defects, right?
Yeah.
Birth defects,
yeah.
Were almost 100% in the soldiers coming back from one. That's true. That's true. And I started talking about that back then, and even my instructors at school said, no, that can't be. I said, oh, okay, you're right. I'm out of here. Whatever. So anyway, I don't want to use any more of my phone minutes because it's real not close to the end of the month. So I in terms of like when people come in the middle or the middle or the end of the show, and they're tying all the subjects together, or you're bringing out what was in the stacks already or something. And we have some really articulate people who can, you know, you guys can go all over the map with different subjects, and that's just very appealing, you know. I mean, as long as the phone lines aren't stacked up, but I mean, I always appreciate that when you have somebody come on that can carry on a dialogue for considerable amount of time on different subjects, and they're so well spoken and so articulate that's what makes the horn work.
Those are the moments that I cherish the most too, Kate. And I won't burn up too much more of your minutes. I understand where you're coming from, but I learn from this process as much as or more than anybody. And, you know, I used to schedule authors and, you know, public policy people and stuff. People aren't interested in that, generally speaking. They're interested in the news of the day and the music between the spaces, as far as I can tell, or the silence between the notes.
Right.
And so the other thing is the folks who do call in and carry on extended conversations and create conversation radio, because we're chock-a-block with experts.
Yeah.
Real experts.
That's the point I was making.
Yeah, so precisely. Experts who are really good at what they do and are good at enunciating things and still manage to run households on ordinary middle-class or lower-middle-class, even lower-class incomes, and have genius about them. Because it puts the lie to everything that the so-called professional media and our elected representative, you know, poor people is stupid. Well, there are some stupid poor people, but they're not stupid because they're poor, and they're not poor. And you see what I'm saying? There's a lot of enlightened poor folks and a lot of enlightenment in the middle class.
For sure. And I wanted to say, I didn't, when I wrote that response back to what I perceived to be a flame until I found out I didn't know Michael except by his screen name. And, Michael, I know you're listening tomorrow at work on your podcast, whatever. And I wanted to say, if you'd assign that email, your emails are wonderful, by the way. I enjoy them. The other night when Bob read the last one that you wrote in, I couldn't tell. Didn't catch the very beginning of it when you talked about the flamethrower. The chainsaw, toward the last two thirds of that email, I couldn't tell if I thought it was my friend in Chicago who's a writer, or it was a editorial that Bob had written to somebody. I didn't have any idea until he got to the end of the email who that was, and I was really impressed. I know you can't call in and you feel bad because you can't call Peter's show because you're working, blah, blah, blah. But just keep those emails coming, huh? And I'll match your flamethrower with my chainsaw any day, baby. Not to worry.
All right, Kate.
You keep those emails coming in there, Michael.
All right, thanks so much.
I appreciate it. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for making it. I wait all night for calls like these.
Oh, I know. Bye.
Bye. Let's see. Oh, shoot. Blinking lights. Let's see what's going on here. Okay. Listen, let's take a quick break and come back to your more of your phone calls. Light them up. Stack them up. I don't know. Does this resonate with you? Does it make any sense what I... the business with Spitzer and not impeaching, and but the Republicans sure will. Have I drawn a false dichotomy, or is there any reality in what I'm getting at? I don't know. But we'll take a little musical interlude, and then we'll come back with more of your phone calls if you choose to make them. 304-658-3333 and 877-443-2366. This is The Horn.
I'm looking for a hard-headed woman, one who'll take me for myself. And if I find my hard-headed woman, I won't need nobody else. No, no, no. I'm looking for a hard-headed woman, headed woman, one who'll make me do my best. And if I find my hard-headed woman, I know the rest of my life will be blessed. Yes, 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 yeah. I know a lot of fancy dancers, people who can glide you on a floor, oh, floor. They move so smooth, but have no answer. Oh, oh, oh. When you ask what you come here for, I don't know why. We'll be right back. make me do my best. And if I find my heart-headed woman,
it's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All rested and ready and hot for another hour of scintillating conversation radio. Made ever so much more scintillating when, you know, you decide to be part of the conversation. You know the number, 877-443-2366, toll free, on your nickel, if you've got a an unlimited long-distance dialing plan, that kind of thing, 304-658-3333. Conversation radio like nothing you can't get anywhere, nothing you can get anywhere else. Oh, language problems. Let's see if this is somebody there on the phone. Hey.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, first of all, I got to turn up my microphone. I can't hear you. Is that better?
I wasn't having any trouble hearing you at all.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I agree with you completely about the Spitzer thing with the impeachment. I mean, it's just... I sat there all last night and part of today and just snarled, because that's all I could do. Then I yelled at Nancy's office for a while. Not that that did any good, but I figured it'd do me some good.
Yeah, hey, you see those Republicans talking about impeachment? They've got a table, and impeachment's on it, Nancy.
Yeah, and I asked her, do you see what kind of a joke you are? I don't know if that's going to get through to her. I don't know. But the main reason I called was something you said last night on the horn section.
Okay.
You were talking about the drugs getting into the ground, you know, into the water supplies.
Right.
And almost without fail, one of those drugs that shows up are anticonvulsants.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that was almost always on the list.
Oh, yeah. Okay, people, I'm something of an expert in this. Seeing as I have to take these little buggers every day. You need to start paying attention to this and really jump all over your local people to find a way to filter these things out. Anticonvulsants have some of the damnedest side effects you've ever seen.
Such as?
Birth defects.
Okay. What kind?
Point where, I mean, really bad birth defects. The only reason I found out about it, a woman in Washington birthed the monster that lived, and so she sued the drug company because they didn't bother to tell her. This was quite a few years ago. However, there are other side effects. These drugs are really hard on your liver. I would be really interested in seeing a correlation between those drugs showing up in the water supply and the rate of liver disease and liver failure.
Right now, the caveat that ran all the way through this story, however, was that these are at such low concentrations that they couldn't possibly have any impact. I am at best not convinced.
No,
because they,
you better not be.
They build up in, you know, depend various and sundry different tissues of the body. They build up in fatty tissues. They build up in, and hard on the liver, rough on the kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
And the
bone
thing
marrow,
is,
hepatic toxicity.
And the thing, but the thing is, they've become so ubiquitous in the world water supply. I mean, it's not just America.
Yeah.
They've become so ubiquitous in the world's water supply that it's almost impossible to correlate an effect because everybody's getting it.
Well, that's why they've got to start scrubbing the stuff out, because it's bad. You know, it's one thing because I've got a seizure disorder, I have to take it. It's another thing when I realize, hey, I'm helping to poison most of the people around me, because this stuff is poisonous.
Yeah, and even what? Though even if you're that's the part that's sort of the most tragic out of this is that when it is used properly, when it is taken as prescribed, the nature of medication is such that the body does not utilize it all, and some of it is cleared through the bowel, some of it's cleared through the kidney.
Uh-huh.
And it can't help but go into some sort of water supply. I mean, if you go out in the backyard and pee on the ground,
yeah,
it's going to get into a water supply, because even 50 feet of dirt can only filter so much.
Yeah. One of these anticonvulsants by the name, its brand name is Dilantin.
I'm very familiar with Dilantin.
Oh, yeah. Most widespread of all. It's got a cute little side effect that I ran into quite a few years ago that most people aren't aware of. It leaves a residue in your system, in your brain. And after a while, you can't walk, because every time you go to take a step, you find yourself flat on your face.
Is it like a vertigo effect or something?
No, there's no dizziness. All of a sudden, you just, you know, it's like your balance is gone. All of a sudden, you're just on the floor.
That's not comforting.
No,
I remember it because I have a very dear friend who had some sort of a pass out or a seizure or something in college, and they put him on Dilantin. And after he took it for a couple of years, we'd be sitting around talking, and I'd say, hey, you remember when we... And he'd go, no.
Yeah, it wipes out your memory. I got a whole... I got a memory like Swiss cheese. Some things I can remember right back to the age of 5. Other things that happened yesterday, forget it. You know, it's just... You know, sure, some of that CRS disease, but other... You know, the rest of it is just... My memory is just not there.
That's got to be maddening. It had to be absolutely frightening when you first started with this. Is it okay if I ask how long you've been taking it?
Yeah, it's no problem. I've been an epileptic since age 13, and I'm 58 now. It's been a while.
And you've been on Dilantin that whole time?
And phenobarbital.
Wow.
For a while there, just after, just after it was approved by the FDA, I was put on valproic acid until the year 2000, when it was discovered that that triggered a urea cycle defect. So I can't take that anymore. That'll kill me.
I don't know what to say. I mean, I've got my three little bottles and my three little pills that I take every day. One is because I've got God's own hiatal hernia and gastric reflux disorder, and I can't afford Prevacid.
Yeah.
So I take ranitidine. One's for my blood pressure, and the other is to try to negate the effects of 40,000 years of Northern Europeanness and my ability to store a really, really profoundly competent ability to store fats in my body. I mean, you put me at the Arctic, Susan, and you know what? My gene pool is going to go on, because I can store some fat.
No, I'm the same type. I just don't have the high blood pressure to go with it.
But I think my high blood pressure is probably situational. I know for a fact that when I'm out and I'm active and I'm doing stuff, my blood pressure is... happy 120/70, but two and a half years now of sitting behind this console and watching myself turn into Jabba the Hutt has caused my blood pressure to go up. And oddly enough, I think one of the things that makes my blood pressure actually go down is getting to rant and rave and scream a little bit.
Oh yeah, it helps, Noanne. The main thing I wanted to say is, any drug that is made to affect your central nervous system, like these are, watch it, because it's got hell's own side effects.
And we don't know what impact, because we don't I don't know that there are adequate studies out there. I didn't see anything in the article that we were working from last night, Susan, that said what there is about half lives and, you know, as you mentioned, you know, storage in various tissues in the body.
Yeah. Most of these end up in your liver, which is why they're so hard on your liver.
So do you believe in those I've seen them, I've never used one, those herbal or nutritional liver cleanse supplements?
No, because I have a standing rule. Anything that's advertised as a panacea type thing, they're lying.
Well, that's kind of a sweeping generalization, isn't it? I mean, I'm not talking about the herbal baldness cures or anything.
Well, that's what I, you know. Some of the stuff that is sold in as health food type things or as food supplements, no. I want to see studies. Because none of the health food stuff is regulated. None of it.
No, and, well, it used to be. And it was there was a big push put on. The natural foods community was behind it. I remember about being able to get, access to herbs and stuff. And that's when the herbal remedy counter began to explode at your local cut-rate pharmacy or whatever. But the thing is, nobody does studies on these things, Susan, because they can't make a buck on it. Once again, you've led us off into the discussion about a for-profit healthcare system.
Oh.
The only time you see studies on vitamins in this country or on nutritional supplements in this country is if some pharmaceutical company has a vested interest in disproving its efficacy.
Exactly.
Now, on the other hand, you go to Europe, and the European countries study things for the sake of studying them, and as a consequence, I believe it was the Germans that found the antidepressant qualities of St. John's wort.
Yeah.
And, valerian as a some sort of a nerve stabilizer or whatever. I believe it was Europeans who discovered the phytoestrogens contained in things like black cohosh and milk thistle as a replacement for things like, you know, as a potential replacement for pharmaceuticals like Premarin, which is used in postmenopausal women. Wow, I'm really a bull in the china shop at this point, talking about stuff I really don't know that much about. But they study it to find out what it does. The for-profit pharmaceutical industry, however, studies it to find out whether or not they can claim it doesn't work as compared to their for-profit medication.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I was an early supporter of Dennis, because he was for single-payer health care, which would have cut these monsters out of the loop. And I don't care what anybody says. Insurance companies are monsters. They're leeches.
Sure they are. There's no doubt about it. I think about something as simple as omega-3 fatty acid fish oil. It's my understanding within European heart ailment treatment protocols, it is almost a breach of the standard of care not to put somebody on fish oil capsules. Over here, you don't even get told about it unless you happen to be very lucky and talking to someone who isn't in the thrall of the local drug rep hustler.
Yeah. Well, yeah. When I say show me studies, I don't care if they're originally written in German or not. I just want studies.
Yeah, of some sort, and that aren't biased, that aren't junk
exactly.
science, or what a phrase I heard used at tobacco science.
Oh yeah, that's the truth. But a lot of what is coming out of the United States anymore is basically tobacco science. And I'm not talking just about the health system either. I'm talking about physics, math, history, all of it, all of the sciences. Because our dear darling religion industry has turned it into
junk.
Echo science. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a story a couple of weeks ago, and the New York Times jumped right on. Oh, McCain makes big gaffe in Texas. And McCain had mentioned thimerosal, which was the mercury-based additive to vaccines that acted as a preservative agent.
And it's also been linked to autism.
Right, but the New York Times said, oh, it was a big gaffe because all the science now says that there's no link between thimerosal and autism. Well, no, the science doesn't say that. However,
exactly.
the bogus science, the phony science, the dummied up for-profit science from the drug manufacturers that have used thimerosal and whose asses are on the hook as a result of thimerosal, now their science says that.
Yeah.
But that's the science that they paid to say it.
Yeah. And those drug companies are busily settling out of court right and left with the parents of those kids because they know they're screwed.
You know, when autism doesn't exist in a population and then suddenly it just crops up, it's cropping up for a reason. I mean, basic logic tells you that. And unless some pathogen has been introduced or some new germ or some bug or, you know, like the Europeans arriving in the New World and wiping out 99% of the New World population with smallpox and measles, that accounts for it because you've introduced something new.
Yeah.
But really, the only commonality, I'm still fairly convinced that thimerosal is the culprit.
Oh, I am too. Otherwise, these insurance companies for the drug companies would not be busily settling like crazy. And they are. They're settling out of court. Confidential agreements.
Oh, yeah. And non-disclosure agreements.
Yeah. And you know what that means. We're guilty, but we're not going to admit it.
The payment of this settlement is in no wise an admission of responsibility or liability on the part of Big Pharmaceutical Corporation of America, its heirs, its descendants, or its assigns in perpetuity forever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah, I know. I've read the damn things. Susan, have yourself a good night, dear.
You too, and may the flying spaghetti monster reach out his noodly appendage to touch you and soothe you.
Ramen, and upon you as well.
Amen.
Yar.
Good night.
Bye.
Yar.
I swear it's going to be fun when we start doing video and I get the pirate suit. Let's see if this is a phone call. Nah, that's a busy signal. Hi, who have I got?
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, how are you, dear?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Getting along, I reckon.
I've been listening to your conversation and I thought about three different things. But one thing, you were talking about, the different kind of vitamins and so forth, or,
mm-hmm.
or nutrients and...
Nutritional supplements, sure.
Yeah. Years ago, I worked for the Department of Agriculture, and, they had a government program where we would go out and go to migrants' homes and people who were getting commodities to teach them, you know, how to use the commodities and to teach them nutrition.
Yeah, like commodity cheese and peanut butter and butter
and
beans and stuff.
Yeah, they didn't
like
have
that.
Those stamps back then.
Oh, commodity cheese.
Well, the commodity cheese was pretty good.
You're darn right. It was the best that America
it
had
was.
To offer.
My dad
always said that stuff, and you know, we'd run across a block of it from somebody who would get it and didn't want it, and they'd give it to him at the plant or something, and he'd bring that block of commodity cheese home and hand it to my mother and say, Margaret, we're having macaroni and cheese. Because it made, lordy.
It was really good.
Anybody who's had Velveeta but never had that, you don't know, oh man.
No, Velveeta's not in the picture to me.
Velveeta is not cheese, okay? Like I said, anything that bills itself as cheese that you can leave out at room temperature and it doesn't rot, you know, no.
No telling what it is. But what I wanted to say about that was we had that was when you had the basic four food groups.
Right.
I'm just analyzing how things change, you know. Just because they tell you something doesn't mean it's correct. And I met this lady that was, her and her husband, they were migrant workers, and they had a little home they were renting. And she read the prevention magazine, you know. You heard of that?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my mom read Prevention. She read all the Adele Davis books, you know, Let's Eat Right to Keep Fit, all of that stuff.
Well, this lady, she didn't have a lot of education, but believe me, she knew about that stuff. And she is the first person that I ever heard say anything about vitamin E. She was teaching me.
Right,
And she was telling about vitamin E, and we didn't have that. At that time, it was not included. And you would ask people, they said, oh, there's nothing to it. You know, the people that were in charge, there's nothing to that. And, of course, now, of course, it's just a normal part of it, you know.
But you mentioned the four basic food groups, Juanita.
Uh-huh.
And that reminds me of something. There's a new book, you know, a year or more ago, I had Michael Pollan on the program who wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma. And he's got a new book out called In Defense of Eating or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Another excellent book. And one of the stories that he tells is way back when it's an example of how politics and lobbying sleazes up good intentions in Washington D.C. And if I recall the story correctly, what he describes is a situation where study after study had come out saying that eating too much red meat is bad for you.
Uh huh.
So there was a move to promulgate a statement saying, don't eat so much red meat.
Uh-huh.
Immediately, the lobbyists for the beef industry moved into action, and they descended upon whoever that legislator was, mm-hmm. like ducks on a June bug.
Yeah.
And so instead of saying, don't eat so much red meat, it got changed by the lobby into, make smarter food choices.
Uh-huh. Yeah, all in the wording.
Yeah, and frankly, make smarter food choices. Okay, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean I need to cut down by two ho hos or four ho hos a day?
I'm beginning to wonder. Did you ever watch that show on Fox? The family where they hardly had anything to eat.
No, I don't think so.
I can't remember now. Family. Anyway, they had anything they could get a hold of, and his wife, she had an affair with a guy that was on the perfect diet, and she got him to eat some of the food that they ate, and he died. And her husband said, "Well, me and the cockroaches." You know.
Yeah, I do.
It's kind of like, sometimes you have to eat what you can get, you know. What choice do you have?
That headline has stayed with me for weeks now. The story that said, the rich get organic food and the poor get diabetes.
Yes.
And it's the truth.
I had a cousin that he had a meat store. It was a butcher. And he had food that the rich people bought. A meat that the rich people bought, and then the ones he sold over the counter. And the one the rich people got was much more expensive and better meat. And I thought about when we had that beef scare after Bush came in, and he was talking about, oh, I have some beef. I said, yeah, I bet he has some beef not like we can get. We have to get.
No, the lights really went on for me when I was in that organic store up in Massachusetts. Because
uh-huh.
we don't have that kind of thing around here.
Really?
And no, we don't. And I saw the frozen, organic, pesticide-free, antibiotic-free, hormone-free ground beef. It was just hamburger. Okay, just hamburger, Juanita.
Uh-huh.
Stuff was $7 a pound.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In other words, let's say you want to feed a family of four hamburger helper. Now, you can't feed a family of four on one box of Hamburger Helper.
I know it.
So, and that takes a pound of ground beef, so that means you're into $14 worth of organic, pesticide-free, or the hormone-free, yada, 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 hamburger to feed a family of four.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe have a little bit of leftovers.
Yeah.
What family can do that? What family can do that every night of the week? You know, these are conscious decisions, Juanita, that have been made, that it's okay to poison the poor and the middle class.
Right.
In the name of profit.
Right. And I think that's got a lot to do with the water. I'm sort of wanting to connect that to the water situation, you know, with all the things in it. You know, there's no telling. I use a filter now on my kitchen sink, you know, one of the things that goes on the faucet.
Right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And I had, when we were having all the hurricanes down here, I had, you know, you save up water, hopefully, if you can. And I had some filtered water, and I had one container of it that I just kept. I think I still got it somewhere. And all this stuff was growing in it. And this was filtered water. Filtered tap water.
Yeah.
But it has all these. I haven't dared to even open it up and look at it. I think I will sometime. But I think, Lord have mercy, what in the world is all that stuff?
I used to use one of those Brita, you know, countertop water filters that you fill up and you just let it drip through. And I cut open one of those filters one time, Juanita, and just sat there and you,
goodness.
Yeah, when I we've done it with well water, and of course it was all irony and rusty. Mm-hmm. But we've done it with tap water too, and that's full of yuck.
Yeah.
So
we used to have well water, and the last one we got was solid rust.
Oh, the well water we used to have here before they strip mined out the road. The well's 72 feet deep, and the water would come up out of that. I mean, crystal clear and.
Oh, is that spring water?
No, well water.
But I mean, it was.
It was just crystal clear, sweet as could be, and ice cold.
Yeah, there's places here in Florida that you can do that. You can get that kind
and
of.
And they strip mined about 20 years ago out the road. The water level dropped, and now it's all just full of all kinds of filthy sediment.
That's a shame. That's a dirty, rotten shame.
Yeah, but coal keeps the lights on, Juanita.
But I'll agree with you about Spitzer. I mean, when I heard the Republicans saying, if you don't quit, we'll impeach you, I thought,
Yeah, because they will. They're serious.
But not us. Not us.
No.
We're
better than them, Juanita. We're nice people. We don't impeach war criminals or anything. That would be mean, and we don't want to be mean.
What are they doing? I mean, please tell me, what are the Democrats doing that we have in charge? What are they doing that is so grand? I know it's better than having the Republicans in charge. I know it would be worse. But still, impeach the guy. That thing that you played about him, that news thing, he was throwing everything up, and the people were just laughing.
Yeah, you mean singing about it. Yeah, ha ha, that's funny. Just slapping the American people in the face with what he did with Scooter
Libby.
It's
worse than Nero fiddling while Rome burned.
Yeah, because at least Nero could keep a tune, Juanita.
Huh?
Nothing. Go ahead.
Go ahead. What'd you say?
I just said Nero could keep a tune. You know, fiddled while Rome burned. Nero, at least Nero could keep a tune.
Uh-huh.
George Bush was all off key.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's supposed to could sing good. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But I think what we got is more like Caligula. How do you pronounce it?
Yeah, Caligula.
Caligula.
Yeah.
With a touch of Nero. I think this guy. Well, maybe I shouldn't even say it.
No, he's
probably in trouble already.
He's a monster, and we are sadly short of a Praetorian cohort to, you know, set things right.
And we've got this. They got to have something on these people that they're not doing anything. Don't they know how they look? I don't know. Impeach him. I mean, I don't care whether we win or lose. Impeach him. Get it out there. Get all the junk out there, a part of it.
I don't think it's that they've got anything on them. They're just cowards, Juanita. They're just cowards. And you know, we're in a way, we're kind of trying to make excuses for them when we say, well, you know, maybe they've got pictures of them swinging naked from the chandelier or something. No, no. They're just cowards. They are cowards, and they are madly in love with their own political power, and they think that if America continues to go down the toilet, then come next November, they'll get even more power.
Yeah.
And they will sacrifice soldiers, they'll sacrifice blood, they'll sacrifice treasure, they will sacrifice anything they can get their hands on, as long as they think that in November of 2008, it will enhance their political power.
Yeah.
And, ooh, boy, I tell you what, that makes dinner kind of tough to keep down sometimes, Juanita.
Yeah, it is unconscionable.
It is. Well, I got a couple backed up here. Let me get to those.
You have a good evening.
You take care, Juanita.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, let's see who this is. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, you talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
Okay, this is Cindy out in the Northwest.
Oh, Cindy, so good to hear from you.
How you doing?
You know, setting them up and knocking them down.
Sitting up there turning into Jabba the Hutt, I hear.
Yeah, I am.
Well, someone out there was talking about cowards and don't call in because they're afraid to talk publicly, and that sounded like me, so I thought I'd ring the phone.
I think you'll probably make it all the way through the call. We haven't lost one yet, Cindy.
Oh, okay. Well, I heard Juanita talking about the last thing I heard before, you know, the time delay thing. Was she thinks they got something on these politicians, why they won't do the right thing.
Yeah.
Well, that reminds me, I wrote a letter to Elliot Spitzer the other day. I emailed his office and said, don't resign. Don't resign. Force those so-and-sos to impeach you. And then while you're going through that process, we'll be able to hold up their hypocrisy for the world to see because, you know, we can't impeach one guy for war crimes, but the other guy we impeach for getting diddled, you know? I mean, this is a sick country, right?
Getting diddled. Sorry, I was good. The air came out of my mouth. Yeah, exactly. And look, the whole, you know, they want to start impeachment proceedings in the state of New York. Start them. And you know what? While they're going on, you start with the lead impeachment manager, and you go over his Republican, upright, God-fearing life with a fine-tooth comb until you find the live boy or the dead girl, and you bust his ass. And you do it to the next one, and the next one, and the next one, and the next one. That's how Bill Clinton survived his impeachment.
Well, that's exactly why this guy resigned today, because he did not want to go through that process. There must have been more. He must be protecting some friend or himself or something, because there was...
Cindy, I'll tell you what. I don't mean to cut you off.
Okay.
He's not protecting his buddy, and he's not protecting the hooker. He's protecting the fact that in the Bill Clinton case, we heard about the cigar and the stained blue dress. What we would likely find out with the Elliot Spitzer case is that he likes a nice spanking once in a while, or to be told that he's been a very naughty boy.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. That's the whole point. There was a movie that came out not too many years ago. It was with Tom Cruise, and it was, I think it was called True Lies, where he forced his unwilling wife. He was an up-and-coming.
Oh, Eyes Wide Shut.
Well, Eyes Wide Shut, that was it. And he forced his wife to go to one of these places, you know. And she was humiliated and didn't want any part of it, and he made her go anyway. And, that was a heck of a telling story, don't you think?
Yeah, it was. And it was because, of course, it turned out in a way that she survived the process okay, and it was he who got shattered, he the Tom Cruise character.
Yeah, well, I think that these people who go into politics to get rich, and they get inside the beltway, and they get their beltway lifestyle going. They got all their, you know, their graft going on, and they're collecting all of the bribes that keeps them rich. They become so insulated in their inside the beltway society, because in matter of fact and truth is that they're ashamed of themselves, and they can't come out and mix in decent society anymore. So they become debauched, and the only place they can go to enjoy company is behind locked doors at their own events that they make up and try to keep the word out. And, you know, these sex clubs are part of their circuit, you know? And it's sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and it's anything debauched that they can think of.
You're touching on the exact core of it all, and that is, and you know, it's why people like the ancient Greeks said moderation in all things. I think
exactly
that was Aristotle. Because
the truth is that our country, our leadership, the entire Washington scene is rotted to the core. It's no better than the Soviet Union was.
No, it's not, and there's something, but there's something also even closer to the base of all of this, Cindy, and that is, it's the same thing that drove Rush Limbaugh to literally eat handfuls of OxyContin every day. It's the same thing that that drives anybody with that kind of power or that kind of money to seek constantly for the next thrill, because after a while, when you've got everything, everything becomes terribly, terribly boring. I mean,
exactly.
Neither you nor I can comment on, nor do I think we would want to comment on the sex life of Mr. and Mrs. Spitzer, but she's beautiful. I mean, I got this comment in an email the other day saying she looks like Jennifer Aniston's older sister, and she does.
Oh, my.
She's gorgeous. I mean, any guy his age should be more than thrilled to be married to a woman who looks, and obviously she's no dummy, so, you know, not only can you have sex, you can have conversation after, and for me, the conversation after was always as important as, but that's too much about me. But do you see what I'm saying?
There's a dream that some young women in their 20s acquire, and it's usually fed to them from the media. And I can attest to this because I acquired the same dream when I was in my 20s. And it's that maybe you could marry a rich and famous man and have a nice lifestyle. Because in my day, it was before women's lib, and you married into society. You didn't work on your career to become a part of society. You married somebody that put you there if you weren't an artist.
Even as recent as when I was in college, the women's college across town from where I started, the running gag was that they specialized in the MRS degree.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The MRS degree, exactly. Well, that's what I'm talking about. And in my day, I was very good-looking lady, and what I did was I lived in the Southern California area. I used to go to the very best salons. I worked as a secretary, and every dime I had, I used to go to beauty shops and polish myself up for skin treatments and hair treatments and buy beautiful clothes and wear as nice a clothing as I could and hang out with the nicest people I knew so that I could belong to that set. And I found out that they were the biggest pack of phony. They were so awful. Those people were so awful. And I met people. I worked at two different Fortune 500 companies for the CEOs or their vice president and schmoozed with people who had multi-million dollar bank accounts, people that, you know, owned aerospace companies, people that owned railroad companies, people that owned oil companies, big wigs at United Oil Petroleum. In front of the public, for consumption purposes, they're prim and proper, but when you lock those doors, they're a pack of leches. But you see, Cindy, they have to be
because they have nothing to stimulate them anymore.
Well, I threw away the lifestyle and threw away the clothes and put back on my blue jeans and moved back to the country and said, to heck with it, and I've never been happier. And my husband works at a hardware store, okay? And he doesn't own it, Bob. He works the floor selling hardware, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not wealthy by no means. And, you know, but we're happy. And that's another reason I called in about chemical-free natural food. You went to a natural food store?
Yeah.
That is all we eat. We worked very hard to, the first thing we did, we figured if we don't spend it on good, clean food, we're going to spend it on drugs and medicine to get well, because nobody can live long eating the kind of garbage that we're being given as a nation, and that's why the nation is sick, because our food supply is sick.
Yeah, it's killing us. Between the high fructose corn syrups and the hydrogenated fats and the hydrogenated oils,
yep.
and it's very frustrating. I remember the first time I got diagnosed with high blood pressure, Cindy. You know, the doctor's okay. You know, the salt and the fats got to go. And I was relatively young in a high stress job, and I took him very seriously. So off to the grocery store I go, and I become a label reader, and
yeah.
I start. Okay, I got to have low salt. Okay, so I look for low sodium products and start reading the label, and lo and behold, the flavor in low sodium products is replaced by additional fats. So I said, well, that's a bust. And I go and I start looking for low-fat products, and lo and behold, the low-fat products are enhanced by increased sodium.
Exactly.
And I realized what a shell game it is. And that's when I began taking very seriously the idea of learning to cook, because if I'm going to eat fats, it's going to be fats that I put in them, and it's going to be fats that I, by God, want. You know,
exactly.
I don't find any particular interest in having partially hydrogenated cottonseed oil because it doesn't add any flavor. I want that kind of fat. I'm melting the butter. I am melting the butter, and at least knowing what I'm doing. But
exactly.
We talk about how we treat the poor in this country, and I mentioned in talking to either Juanita or Susan that article that keeps banging through my brain: the rich get organics and the poor get diabetes. You can't the poor earn it. The people who are on food stamps, by God, earn it. With the poor quality of life that they have, and the blood, sweat, and tears that they pour out into carrying an economy by doing the worst and lousiest jobs that this country has to offer, they by God earn it. And we provide food stamps. But then the food stamps, you know, it's not the commodities that Juanita was talking about. It's take it to the grocery store and subsidize the grocery store by buying the groceries that are largely prefab foods that cost three times as much because mommy and daddy both have to work and they don't have time to cook from scratch.
Well, you can't get scratch products at the store. You can't buy sacks of flour and bags of beans. You can't find these things. I scour my area looking for raw materials to cook with. And I know where to look, and I plan my shopping trips. And I go, Bob, 100 miles to buy beans and rice.
For me, it's a 100-mile round trip to get the rice that I want. Because there's a little international market in Charleston, West Virginia, that is run by this charming, charming lady who gets rices and beans and so forth and pulses in from all over the world that you can't get in Kroger's or Wally World or Foodland or anywhere else.
Right.
And that's where my rice comes from, and that's where I buy all my herbs and all my spices in bulk there as well. Because I can buy literally 50 times as much of a given dried herb from her as I can at the grocery store in a little,
tin can.
That, and the can is all of the cost, and I get I get 1/50th of the amount I get from her for half the price.
That's exactly what we do. You know, we put in our organic garden. We have a sanitary chicken house for our own eggs, and we butcher our own chickens, and we grow our own food. And, you know, there's just certain foods that won't grow in our climate, you know, and so we have to go out for those things. But we trade food.
No banana plantation, Cindy?
No. In fact, we got bananas today from the market for the first time in about 4 months. My husband brought home a half a dozen bananas, and so we bought those bags that are green bags that keep your food green in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
They work really well. They're really good product. We were also talking about $5 a gallon gasoline yesterday on your show.
Yeah.
In California, and you were asking whether or not that was a sustained price increase or was it a sudden thing?
Yeah, was it a gouge?
Right, I watch that constantly because it's kind of like a West Coast barometer of what's coming up the road, and it's been steadily climbing. Those guys have had gasoline at $4.60 a gallon for over a year, and it's now over $5. And what I do, I go to Caltrans on the internet and look at the traffic cameras in the different cities to see how heavy the traffic is and what is that $5 gallon gas doing to the traffic flow. And the traffic's running really light. There's hardly anybody out there. Nobody drives anymore in California. And, you know, they've really cut back on it. It used to be you couldn't get out there, but now it's cleared up. So it's having an impact on the amount of fuel that people are burning. And that's a permanent, sustained increase in fuel cost, which has come up this way, too, because our fuel costs, I have not seen a gallon of gas under $3.50 in 2 years where I live.
Wow.
I've seen it. It's been that high for 2 years. And like a can of coffee used to be $3 and change, and now it's $7 and change. You know, coffee's gone up 100%, and loaf of bread's gone up 100%, and milk has gone up 150%. Eggs have gone up 100%. Everything's gone up but the paychecks. My husband got a $200 a month raise for the year. They get a once-a-year raise at Christmas. Turn around 1 week later, we got a $200 a month increase in our medical insurance. So, you know, that's how that works out.
Right. And that's part of the whole dodge. We almost had, you know, from the Eisenhower era up to the middle 70s, we had that era where you had a large number of unionized households that were able to support a single wage earner with decent wages, and the middle class showed themselves entirely too willing to get uppity with our betters.
Well, you know what the women did when they were not working? Large numbers of women were social activists in those days. And I know because my mother took me by the collar and dragged me along to every activity she ever went to, and she used to work for the Democratic Party. And we used to go out every single week, and there was a picket somewhere where we would be picketing a grocery store to bring down the price of eggs or milk or bread. And on the daily news in Los Angeles, every single afternoon when you came home from work and turned on that news, they had the news reporters out there with their feet on the ground in the public, going to the stores asking how much did that basket of groceries cost you, how much did that loaf of bread cost, how much is milk this week. And we kept tabs daily and put pressure on the grocery stores to keep the food down and children's shoes and clothing. And, you know, we insisted that this be covered. We didn't want to hear about Wall Street and people in D.C. We want to know what's going on in our town and how are we going to take care of our families. And I was a little child, and that's the way I was raised. Well, once these right-wingers bought up all the radio and television programs or stations, delivery, they quit with that, and now we get this, wouldn't you love to buy a Exxon Oil Company they show these nebulous commercials about how they're finding oil on the Alaskan shelf or something, but they're not going to dirty anything up. And we're supposed to think that's a commercial, but what it is, it's a bribe. It's a bribe by the oil company to the media company, and they pay them what they would have earned advertising products to sell, but because they don't advertise the products to sell anymore because of the cost margin of advertising dollars, instead these oil companies kick back they have a kickback scheme by putting those rotten commercials on. And so we don't get any commercials, we don't get any news, and it's all Disneyland. It's the world of Disneyland that they always wanted, where everybody pretends that America is a great place to live when everybody knows that it's not.
Yes, and you, a corollary to what you were just talking about in terms of activism, Cindy, is a conversation that I had with my eldest daughter earlier today, and I wasn't giving her hell. I was just trying to give her perspective. And I said, because we were talking about reproductive rights, and we were talking about choice, because see, I'm a real geek, and I talk about my kids with that kind of stuff. And
yes, I did too.
And I said, honey, there out there in the world today, there are 90-year-old women, there are 80-year-old women, there are 70-year-old women, 60-year-old women, and 50-year-old women who busted their asses and took very, very seriously the idea of being able to make their own decisions about their own bodies. and they fought, and there were men who fought alongside of them, and they protested, and they went to rallies, and they got dragged off to jail, and they didn't take no for an answer, and they secured the right to make decisions about their own bodies. And I said, on the other hand, there are teenagers and 20-somethings and 30-somethings and 40-somethings who, instead of continuing to do the rallying, continuing to do the picketing, continuing to be willing to have the daggum guts to get hauled off to jail, say, did you see Lindsay showed her cooch on, or was it Britney's? Oh, my God. Oh, I broke a nail. And
really, isn't it awful? They get what they
That was the point that I was trying to make, Cindy, is that, and then they look up and go, well, wait a minute, I'm pregnant. I don't want to be pregnant. What do you mean, what do you mean, Mr. Pharmacist, that you won't sell me the morning after pill or RU-488? What do you mean it's against God's will? And basically it's because those generations have dropped the damn ball. All that fighting and all that work was done, and then the next generation came, and you know, on the theme, it's my generation that sat back and said, well, you know, the job's done. We don't have to worry about it anymore.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. We passed off the greatest country in the world to the least worthy generation in the world. We have the laziest, stupidest young people of any country in the planet. They can't even hack college anymore, Bob.
You know, that's...
They turn college...
My friends, we got through college okay, but we were also going through... I mean, you know, I started college, Cindy, the year that Ronald Reagan took office. And, you know, I remember...
The year that Ronald Reagan took office, I was done with college, and I was raising my kids.
Right, but what I'm getting at is there was a mindset that attached to that. I mean, I used to get hell inside my fraternity because I hated Ronald Reagan. I despised Ronald Reagan. I made a real ass out of myself one time because I had a big pickup truck. And somebody put a Reagan sticker on the back of my pickup truck, and I walked it into a chapter meeting, and I said, that's real funny, you assholes. Guess what? The kegs won't be going to the stadium this week. Screw you and your Reagan.
Good for you. You know, during the Reagan years, the college kids were all partying up. They were kegging and they were.
That's what I'm talking about. Everybody,
you
know.
They were ripping their blouses off and they were going partying all the time. And everybody, even the adults. I found out my little boy met this other little boy and brought him home. And he's a real cute little kid. Found a boy his own age to be buddies with. So I went over to meet his parents, and they were cokeheads. Didn't matter that the father was the president of the union bank in our town, and that the mother was his office manager. They were the local Coke salespeople, and they wondered if I wanted to a new distributor. And I looked at them about drop my load, because I don't do drugs and never have. But what I ended up doing was moving away, because I didn't want my child around that kind of influence, because quite frankly, I was afraid that somebody would come to rob them for the Coke, pull out a gun, and my kid would be in the crossfire or something, you know? But there was so much...
But that was, yeah, that was the me, get mine 80s, Cindy.
I absolutely quit traveling because you couldn't get on board an airplane without these drugged-up college kids throwing themselves over the seats having a party on board a plane. And, you know, so flying was a horrifying experience. And, you know, I just, you know, that's when I hunkered down and said, man, I got to get out of this town. These people are insane.
I know that's like I'm waiting for the ground to dry out enough to disc my garden space 100 by 100. And I've already started drawing little pictures of where the tomatoes and the cabbage and the corn and everything goes. I'm excited about that because I know, you know, whatever's in it, I'm going to put in it.
Uh-huh. And we've already got a new greenhouse built this year, and our seeds are already in that greenhouse growing.
That's beautiful.
You have to start them early and then transplant the small plants in a couple of weeks to the garden.
Right. You know, I'll have to go out and buy plants, and that's the part I don't like. But
our garden is a half an acre.
Wow.
That's a big garden, and we put out a lot of food.
Yeah, I've got a buddy around here who says never plant a garden bigger than your wife can work.
Well, I had my husband put a garden on the high side of our property because we live on a hillside property, and it's level below where the lower acreage. There's a half of 1 acre is his garden, and I had him put a smaller garden up here so that I could go out every day and pick fresh vegetables for the salad because it's so hard to hump it down the hill and back, and I have arthritis so bad I can barely make it up that hill, you know, but... I used to consider it exercise, and now I just call it pain.
That's a bumper sticker, Cindy. What was once exercise is now just pain.
It is. That's what happens when you get old, you know. But, you know, my advice to anybody who thinks that organic food is too expensive, truthfully, I offer this information. Once you begin to buy it and you change your eating style, my grocery bill is no higher than anyone else's, and my food quality is a lot higher. And I don't have to spend money on medicines that other people spend money on, so I come out ahead of the game.
The other part of that, however, is if you can get it, and it's the other part of that is if you can get it, because I know that organics have not even caught on a little bit around here. I mean, you go to the local Kroger, and there's some ribby dried up apples and some really miserable looking carrots, organic. And
you know what you do?
What?
You quit buying it. Let it rot in their store. Refuse to buy their food. And you know, I went out and we got a whole bunch of neighbors together here. We went out, we bought big sacks of rice and beans, and we used our own vegetables, and we just left the stores alone for, 2 years flat, and 3 stores went bankrupt in left town. And we have the Safeway, we have the you call it Kroger, but here it's called Fred Meyer. It's the same chain. It's owned by Macy's.
Ralph's is part of it too.
Right. We have one Kroger store, one Walmart store, 3 Safeway stores. Is that it? And one farmer's market. And that's all that's in this town. And we keep them with their nose to the grindstone. If they don't put the right stuff in there, they can just sit on it and it'll rot. We don't want it. And my community is about 80% Democratic. And they're all blue collar and they are pretty hard nosed and they stick to their guns. And
that's actually got to be kind of fun to be in that kind of a community. And I mean fun in the gratifying sense of the word, because
and that's why I talk to people that live in communities that are just the opposite, you know.
Well, and I'm one of those. I'm one of those.
Yeah.
Because
I can't for the life of me understand why anyone would want to live in those.
Well,
communities.
Here, let me just take a minute, real quick, Cindy, and see if I can do it in a nutshell. This West Virginia, by and large, and there are pockets that are different. There's about 3 generations back, those people's relatives were born in the mid to late 1800s, and they knew how to raise a damn garden, and they knew how to do without.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 100, 110, 120 years ago, the coal economy hit West Virginia and created a cowed populace, a cowed, servile, servant, obsequious populace. And we began to define ourselves by the stuff that we could finally get from the outside world that we hadn't seen before. All right?
Isn't that awful? I'm thinking of the story of Mate Juan.
Yeah.
As you tell me that, you know?
And well, you know, Mate Juan's part of it. The March on Blair Mountain's part of it. The New River Mine Wars of the 19-aughts. The Kanawha Valley Mine Wars, Paint Creek, all of that. Those were the people that had some starch in them. Those were the people that would fight. But the generations that came afterward were slowly cowed.
Makes me wonder if they are drugging our water with mood alteration, and that's why people won't.
I don't think it took anything nearly that complicated, Cindy. They drugged our water with radio stations pumping electric Jesus at us. They drugged our heads with television when it finally came in. They drugged our heads with gizmos and gadgets and said, if you don't play nice, we'll take them away. You know, we've largely lost our cuisine culture in Appalachia, and it used to be a vibrant cuisine culture. I mean, and just, okay, this is really petty on my part, but just by example, my mother and my grandmother did not shirk from something that was spicy. You know, a little hot and fiery once in a while really made a meal. If you go into a corner diner, what few of them are left here, and you ask for something to be spicy, first they look at you like you got three heads. And then they bring you your plate and set a bottle of Tabasco sauce down beside you.
Oh, my.
And people say, I don't want it. Oh, I mean, and I know people who run restaurants, and they say, you know, if we put something on the menu and say, warning, spicy, it won't sell. It just won't sell.
Well, you know, spicy food prevents infections.
Sure.
Spicy food is healthy for you.
Capsaicin is a natural blood pressure monitor or blood pressure mediator.
You should see, I mean, I don't mean to brag, but Steve and I are your elders by 10 to 15 years, and we look younger than you.
Probably.
Yeah, and it's because, you know, well, spices to spice a life.
Yeah, exactly.
I probably had four different types of peppers and onions in my.
Well, I'll have in my garden this year. I'll probably have 100 different 100 pepper plants of 6 or 8 different varieties, and people
start sharing seeds.
And people will come and visit. What do you want all them hot peppers for?
To eat.
And you say, oh, because I like them. Really, you like that stuff? Yeah, I really do.
You know what I tell you, Bob? Put up a fence. That's what I did.
I know. I make every now and then a pot of chili. What I call from scratch, because I don't use chili pepper. I get the dried great big red New Mexico chili pods and cut them off, and I hydrate them, and I put them through the Foley food mill, and I get this beautiful chili sauce that I add. The coriander and garlic and onions and all kinds of stuff too, and the beef broth, and I use a brisket instead of hamburger, and I use Mayakoba beans instead of pintos, and it's hot. Oh my God! I mean, it makes the sweat little beads come out along my hairline, and it's fabulous. And I'll share it with them. Damn, that's too hot for me. Where, you know, two generations ago, people would have said, give me another scoop.
I know.
But because our food has been industrialized, people have been weaned away from actually knowing what stuff tastes like.
I think that their palates are numbed with chemicals. They can't.
That could be part of it, too.
Their palates are numbed with chemicals. When I was a young kid, I had amalgam fillings in my mouth.
Yeah,
because that's all we had in the old days, and I had them all removed, probably 15, 20 years ago, one by one throughout the years. I had them all removed and had porcelain put in, and I could taste food beautifully after that, and it removed the crystal radio set from my head too. I used to be able to turn my head to the west and hear KGO of Albuquerque.
Oh God!
Up in the mountains,
I don't know what it would be like to have Rush Limbaugh inside my head. I had a
crystal radio in my head, and I had to put a block in my mouth and bite on it to prevent when my teeth would close. It'd turn on real loud.
Some people may not know exactly what you're talking about. My sister is a little bit that way, Cindy, because electronic door openers at the grocery store and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
She'd walk past those things and her head would just feel like it was catching fire.
Yeah,
because it was being transmitted through her dental work. Exactly.
Well, even with the dental work removed now, if I turn on a television set, that high pitched noise it makes, you know, cathode ray tube hum.
Yeah.
that just cuts right through my audio, you know. I'm
right.
Very sensitive that way. Even in a highly insulated house with double thick glass windows, because we live up here in the winterized area, I can still hear the smallest birds outside singing in the garden because I haven't polluted myself with loud, raucous music and screaming motorboats and motorcycles and off-road motors. And, you know, these people today, they live for loud noise and excitement and screaming and music, and their ears are numb, their palates are numb, and their brains are numb.
Right, which goes back to the whole idea of why our so-called betters have to constantly seek the next big thrill. Because
tells us why our so-called betters need a pill to have sex. They can't even stimulate themselves sexually without drugs.
Right, because it's an overload from the power. It's an overload. You know, people who exert profound political power like Spitzer did. I would be willing to guess that part and parcel, if it comes out of what he was into, is we'll find out that when he went to the hooker, he wanted to be hurt a little bit, or he wanted to give up power, or he wanted domination, or something along those lines, because to wield that kind of power and that kind of domination over others is wearying in the extreme.
I've heard that dominatrix do very well in Washington, D.C.
Go figure.
It's a real thing in their social set. They just really enjoy that, you know?
Right, because they exert it over others, and they want to see, there's a psychic need, I guess, to see how the other side lives, Cindy.
I think it must correct the nerve ending in what's left of their conscience, maybe makes them feel less guilty because they've been spanked for the day, you know?
It's the same mindset that motivates the hardcore monk to sit there and flagellate the skin off his own back.
Exactly.
It's the same thing. I mean, there's not a dime's worth of difference except that you're paying somebody to do it for you instead of sitting there and scourging yourself.
I don't want to lose track of one other issue. We were talking about the price of gasoline yesterday. And you ask, does anybody have strategies, fuel strategies for how to live with these kind of prices?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've been asking for years for, you know, flexible working hours and structured work where you could stay home and work on your computer. And that was discussed on your show yesterday. But there's something else that's going on, and it's going on all up and down the West Coast in this three-state area. And that is that people are going to work. And they go in on Sunday night or Monday morning, and they go to work, and starting Monday night, they pitch in, a bunch of guys that commute together, go to work, they'll pitch in and get a inexpensive hotel room or motel room, and they'll all stay in it for four nights, get their showers, get their sleep, go to work in the morning, and they only come home on Friday night. They go to work on Monday, and they come home on Friday.
What kind of life is that?
But at the end of the week, they got a house.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and if, you know, if you've got a job where you've got to be there and you've got to work on the engine, you got to change the oil, or, you know, you've got to sit there and punch the keys on the cash register, whatever that requires your presence, there's no getting around it. But, you know, a whole bunch of our economy is run by people who sit behind computers in a cubicle for 8 hours a day, Cindy. And they don't have to be there. The only reason they have to be there is because of outdated, worn-out, top-down power structures that say, you know, well, you know, you can't trust the workers. You know, when they're not stealing the pencils and the stationery, they're just sitting there goofing off.
That's the world I lived in for a number of years, is that cubicle hell, you know. There's a movie called The Office, I think it was. Or
Office Space?
Office Space with Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, the Mike Judge film. I love it. Yeah, with Stephen Root. And I don't get my stapler back. I'm going to burn this building to the ground. Yeah.
Yeah. While you were going to college, that's what I was doing.
Yeah.
Working in those cubicles.
Oh, I've been in cubicle world.
And I'll tell you, it's a hell of an awful.
It is grim. It is soul depressing.
Yeah. I'm surprised more people haven't blown up the building or killed themselves right on the job. And I like going on the internet. There's this one guy that lost it. You know, I look at YouTube and I put it.
Oh my God! Did you see the video of the guy of people doing mean things to their computers?
Oh yeah! Did you see the guy that threw his cathode ray tube right through the copy machine?
Yeah.
Because he couldn't send a document. And oh my God, is that hilarious? And that's what's going on in today's office. I say bully for them. Tear the house down.
Yeah, I mean, the one of the jobs that I worked before I came back and decided to have a go at radio again because it's in the back, you know, radio's in me like some sort of terrible virus that you can't get rid of. I did some telemarketing, and I was terribly, terribly good at it. And it was all this cubicle thing, and it was very regimented and, well, you know, if you get one more sale, you can go and have a cigarette, Bob. And I'd just look at the guy and go, I'll tell you what, I think I'll go have the cigarette now. Well, you can't do that. Stop me. Well, I'll fire you. Cool, do that.
Yeah.
Fire the one guy who's actually selling anything on this miserable campaign. You know, I mean, there's a special place in hell reserved for me. I was hustling credit cards to 90-year-old people. Even worse, I was hustling AOL, Cindy. I mean, that, you know, the devil is rubbing his hands together every day. Oh, I'm going to get him for that AOL. I'll overlook the credit cards, but the AOL, oh, he's getting it.
I got to ask.
Hey, look,
you,
a pineapple.
You know, AOL, did you sell that to Mike Malloy?
No, I don't think.
That's a running joke with him, you know.
Oh, I know. Yeah, he's one of those people that still has an AOL email address. And, you know, it's gotten to the point where I see AOL email addresses and I go, why? Yeah,
I know.
I mean, I'm a Gmail junkie myself. You know, when I'm having to get along, you know, it's the computer thing that I'm dealing with. Hopefully that'll be remedied in the next couple of days, by the way. But I love Gmail. Huge storage, the little chat serves as a nice backup in case the production chat ever goes down with the other hosts. And I know that they don't always live up to their motto of don't be evil.
Uh-huh.
But they just do good stuff.
Great.
I mean that cubicle world grew up in computer cultures and computer business culture and things like that, and it's people like AOL that are taking it and turning it on its head. They've got a nap room, and the boss doesn't, you know, the boss doesn't look at you out of the corner of the eye if you kind of, you know, rub your eyes a little bit, you know, big old yawn. Be back in a minute. I'm getting a nap. What's that personality study, Cindy? Briggs-Myers personality assessment. You ever been through one of those?
Oh yeah. They told me that I was a leader and all this other stuff, you know.
Yeah, they told me I was like an Aquarius and, you know, grandson of Napoleon and all of that stuff. But but what it did identify is that, and very, very truly, I'm not a morning person, and I don't think I will ever again from now for however long the ride lasts do a 9-to-5 job. Because I'm not awake then. I mean, you can get me up at 6, you can throw me in the shower, you can turn the cold water on, and I'll scream a little bit and lather up and go, but I'm not going to be worth a tinker's damn till about 3. Now, I'm hell on wheels from, you know, 2 or 3 in the afternoon till about 2 in the morning. But, no, and the thing is, more and more, to the extent that we have any sort of responsive business culture in this country, they're going to have to come to terms with the differences in human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're talking about here is the resistance of the business culture to doing that.
Well, as long as they have their little castle called Wall Street, they think they own the country.
Because they think they own the people.
They think that we are their property, their labor pool.
Yeah.
And they don't even have the decency to call us citizens. They call us consumers.
That drives me just nuts.
That incenses me. And if anybody calls me a consumer, I will not buy their product, period. I'm not a consumer. I'm a citizen. And, you know, I pay enough taxes to prove it.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering why we have a government that does nothing for us. You know, why do we pay taxes? So that there could be roads, so that they could get us.
Right. Well, that because
deliver stuff to keep us alive.
Yeah, because the authoritarian horses' asses out there think that government exists and taxpayers exist to subsidize their redistribution of the wealth from the bottom up. Now, I don't, yeah. You know, I'm not going to start singing the International or anything, but I mean, it really is. The government does not exist to promote the general welfare in the world view of a pig licking. The government exists to redistribute wealth from the bottom up, and
they,
you know,
believe that government exists to extend force over the working class, so that they will.
Yeah, and not necessarily just the working class in this country, but the working class in countries all over the world. You know, I see bombs going off in Iraq. I see working people getting blown up.
I do too.
I don't see Iraqis. I see workers.
I think that what we've got right now is a fascist imperialist state, and we are all the jackasses who are stuck in it, and that we're a completely oppressed society. And I told my husband, if anybody ever brings an American flag around my place, they should be hung upside down.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Well, you said...
I emailed Coal Mountain Watch and said, how come those flags on Google Earth are right side up? Shouldn't they be upside down?
Darn straight. You mentioned the F word, fascist. I saw an interesting piece of trivia just in the last couple of days that made me just sit there kind of Google-eyed and slack-jawed. During the Second World War, do you know the name of the president of the American Fascist Party?
Was it Henry Ford?
No, his last name was Scalia.
Really? Scalia? Any relation to Anthony Scalia?
His daddy.
Are you kidding? That is rich. I'm not surprised.
And, you know, you find out, just little tidbits bang around out there, and, you know, it's not some urban myth. Guy was the president of the American Fascist Party. Great admirer of Mussolini. That explains why Antonin Scalia doesn't have a problem with torture.
Exactly. I'd like to know, what mechanism do we have to get rid of these judges in the Supreme Court? Because I have no respect for our Supreme Court anymore. I see it as a rogue arm of a rogue government.
Well, you know, you listen to Malloy, Cindy, so you know he's always talking about the four boxes.
Oh, yeah.
Ballot, jury, soap, and ammo?
Yes. The one that I keep.
But the problem with the judiciary is that it takes some of those boxes out of play. You don't have a ballot box, and you don't have a jury box.
Well,
because they serve for life.
What I dream about at night when I think about these problems is, what did our forefathers do to correct these kind of problems? Well, you had the storming of the Bastille, and then you had the judgment at Nuremberg, and I really like that Nuremberg model where they took the bastards out and hung them by piano wire. I like that piano wire idea. So if you couple that with the Bastille idea.
Realistically... The answer to thugs like Scalia and Alito and Roberts and this horse's ass who tried Don Siegelman in Alabama is the Constitution. There's nothing wrong with the Constitution, Cindy.
That they're holding it hostage.
Except that they don't know anything about it.
Instead of putting our Social Security in a lockbox to protect it, they put our Constitution in a lockbox and they locked it away from us. It's not
to protect themselves. To protect themselves.
Exactly.
You know, why?
Have you noticed it's been suspended lately?
Yeah, no kidding. They just didn't hang the sign up. They waited for some people to figure it out.
So why don't we get 4th of July this year going where everybody puts the flag out upside down?
Yeah, put the flag out upside down and actually stand in a crowd of people and read the Declaration.
Yeah.
Because when you get to that list of grievances, you can do a global search and replace on your word processor and replace King George or George or he with George or Bush or President.
Exactly.
And apart from the business about wanting to kill all the Indians, the thing still pretty much matches up.
It does. It's kind of like before my father passed away in his mid-80s, age-wise, he was telling me that at his age that life seems to be like a big repetition circle, that everything that's happening he's seen happen before. And if you look out across history, you'll see that it keeps repeating and repeating. Man never grows smarter. He just figures out the angles and does it again.
Well, that's, yeah, that's what I keep preaching about the Republican Party. People say, well, you know, we never expected the Republicans to do this. Dummies, it's only because you didn't study history. Because everything the Republican Party has done under George Bush since 2001, since January 2001, is nothing but a rehash of everything that happened between 1921 and 1932 in the United States.
Exactly.
It's just a rehash. The only thing is, the people who are old enough to remember it are dead.
And what comes next?
Well, if things repeat themselves, we're already in the middle of what comes next.
Yeah, now, 1929 stock market crash didn't happen overnight, like they woke up on Saturday morning and the money was gone and the world fell apart.
No, they didn't hang signs up. It was a progression. It was a...
And that's what we're seeing right now. 200 one day, 400 the next, 500 the next. I'm watching that and it's going down, 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 down. And it's happening.
Yeah, but the
largest single day's gain since 2002.
It was artificial.
Yeah, it was dummied up. The Fed dumped a ton of money, a ton of liquidity into the market to keep it from going entirely into the tank. But the thing is, we don't have unlimited funds with which to do that. And they will get caught.
Market Watch had a headliner this afternoon. I don't know if I sent it out to you or not, but Market Watch had a good headliner talking about how the artificial bump up is on its way back down, that the traders came in at the end of today
and took all the profits.
It says investors feed on Fed rally and stocks are losing as oil goes over 110 and it's starting back down. Our market's closed and it hit the top. It slid to 46.57. So every night when Wall Street closes, they run to the international bank and they figure out how to handle the next day to keep the...
But this is... Yeah, and still, you know, remember, Cindy, this is still wealth redistribution. This is bottom-up redistribution of wealth.
They're trying to prevent the stock market from completely crashing to zero before Bush leaves the office so they can blame it on the Democrats that are going to come in.
Exactly. Exactly. And, I don't know, Obama and Clinton both think that they can solve this problem and keep the big crash from coming. I don't know why McCain wants to be president, because he can't and he won't.
He's an egomaniac.
Well, there's that.
He thinks if he drops a few nuclear bombs and starts up some more big wars, that all of these federal contractors can bring jobs to all of us people, and that we'll just run down to the nearest factory and start building planes and boats and trains like they did in World War II, so that he can hot dog and fly one on top of a deck again and maybe even drop another bomb and burn up another forest all, you know? He lives in the past. He's in a fantasy world. The guy's insane.
And perhaps he also thinks that if he can just warmonger a little bit more, he can artificially gin up and dummy up the American economy with the military-industrial complex.
He can also fill a slot so that they can put Jeb Bush in as a VP. He kicks off and Jeb is the next guy.
I've been preaching it since I saw that tiny little bit of footage, and I mean the cameras just went and moved away during the 2004 Republican National Convention, Cindy. And it was a little cancerous knot of Republicans, all with the same sign, Jeb 08.
Exactly.
And the minute that the camera focused on them, you could hear some producer in the truck going, get it off, get it off, get it off, get it off.
That's exactly what their game plan is. And that brings to mind something. You notice how us Democrats, we let it all hang out. We're out there on the radio, in the internet, raising heck every day, talking about our feelings and the politicians and what we think and, you know, what we should do. And, you know, we banter about publicly. And that's because we're not ashamed of ourselves. We freely talk about what's going on. But those people They have secured internet sites that we cannot enter to see what they're talking about.
Oh, no. You mean like Freeperville, Free Republic, that kind of crap? And
No.
Oh, okay.
That's their dog and pony show.
Yeah.
These people are corporations, and corporations have their own computer services. They have their own computer services that is separate from our public internet.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And although they may fly electrons across our internet, they're always packaged in secure envelopes so that they do not go out for general consumption. The same way that the packets that go from bank to bank to bank are not for public consumption, their game plans, their bantering, their political speak, their plans, everything they think of this or that or what they're going to do, they talk about on secured internet connection so that we can't hear what they're doing. And for us, you know, you put your left ear up and try to see what the Republicans are talking about these days, and all they're doing is sitting there silently taking it all in, what we're talking about, because they're playing us all for a pack of fools.
Oh, yeah. I just got an email rolling in here from someone who says, man seldom makes the same mistake twice. Instead, he makes it over and over and over and over again.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, it's from our buddy David down in Tennessee, Mighty Sharp Cookie.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
Yeah, and you know, it's like the old definition of what, psychosis or something, that the definition of it is that is doing the same thing again and again and each time expecting a different result.
Well, if we had leadership we could believe in, we Democrats, if we had leadership that we could believe in and we could trust, then we could give them some secure sites to talk on too, and we wouldn't worry much about it. And they do have that capability, but our own leadership sold out to the corporations as well. So we don't have leadership. We, the people, we, the Democratic constituents, the people across America are not represented. And the reason why we're out here raising hell on the internet and the airwaves and every way we can is because we do not feel represented. Nobody cares about our interests. Nobody cares if we're able to go to the doctor when we're sick, or we're able to take a day off of work so that we can keep our head in the toilet vomiting because we've got the flu. You know, anybody like that, how dare you stay off of work? You're fired. You can't go down and get any welfare anymore. It doesn't exist. I know a woman in a wheelchair that's almost starving to death, and she gets $36 a month food stamps to live on. You know, I work with the homeless shelter down here, and it's just pitiful how awful it is. The average time for people that lose their jobs and fall out of the job market, average time to find a job these days is 2 years.
Jesus.
There's no unemployment that will carry you 2 years. There's no social program that will help keep you out of homelessness for 2 years. So what is happening to our people? They're falling onto the street by the hundreds of thousands into a homeless condition. And I was once homeless myself. I lived in my automobile for 2 years while I regrouped and rebuilt my life. So I know what it's like, and I know what homeless people have to do. And I've never lost touch with my homeless friends, and I've never quit trying to help them learn how to pick it up again and get back on the course and ride. And so I'm intimately aware of what happens in these situations, and I'm telling you, things are really bad out there these days, and once a person falls into homelessness, they become invisible. They can't speak publicly. They can't write a letter to the editor. They can't call their congressman. They can't even join a movement and march in the street because they don't know where the other homeless guy is at. It's like human flotsam in the wind, floating around in a nebulous condition, unable to connect or organize or do anything, complete helplessness, and numbers of them die. You know?
Yeah. And
so that's what we do to our extra people here in America. We don't take care of them. We throw them out like trash.
Oh, look, I've got a story here out of Arkansas, Cindy, out of the New York Times, oddly enough. You know it's got to be something if the New York Times picks up an Arkansas story. Arkansas woman left in cell goes 4 days with no food or water. Our moderator in the chat room, ELO, sent this along to me. A woman was locked for 4 days in a tiny holding cell in a northern Arkansas courthouse, forgotten by the authorities, and left without food or water for 4 days.
Oh, my God. Did she live?
She lived. Her name is Adriana Torres Flores. She's 38 years old. She's been in America for 19 years. All of her children were born here.
But she's an illegal alien.
And she had been brought into court and charged with something and was put in the holding cell that's only meant to keep somebody for, you know, an hour or two. It's right there in the courthouse. And the bailiff just kind of forgot.
Oh, my God.
And didn't come back till Tuesday.
What kind of people are that selfish and cold-hearted that they could do that to another human being?
No, wait. You're using all the wrong words, Cindy. Could do that to another human being.
Exactly.
She wasn't a human being to them.
She's a illegal alien.
Just like the word you were talking about that you hate so much, consumer.
Yeah.
There's a reason that people from south of the border, be they Guatemalan, Honduran, Ecuadorian, Mexican, whatever, hate illegal alien so much. Because it hangs the very word illegal on the idea of, it's not illegal alien, it's illegal human. As if they don't have a right to exist upon the planet. And frankly, this story could have come out of Arkansas, or it could have come out of North Dakota, South Dakota, it could have come out of Washington, it could have come out of New York. Because there is a mindset among people in this country that says that, you know, if you don't speak the right language or you don't have the right skin color, that you are indeed less than human. And this is part of our prison culture. This is part of a culture that says that the humans we don't care about, we will warehouse.
I'd like to know what kind of chronic spiritual disability American people suffer with when we can just keep this up year in and year out, decade after decade, this inhumanity to one another, and then get on TV and call ourselves heroes.
Let's put it this way. We have a population that is roughly a third that of China's, conservatively estimated. We have a million more people in our prisons than China does.
I know we do.
And China is, of course, a totalitarian dictatorship.
You know what the owners of our country call that prison population, don't you? They call it cheap labor.
Yeah, and they call them, go read. I was telling somebody the other day, go read a pre-sentence investigation report. It always has that BS government speak language in it. This offender was born on the third day of March. This offender attended school. This offended blah, 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 blah. This offender got a traffic ticket. And it's never referred to this person or this human being. It's this offender.
I know.
And what we have here, you said, you know, what kind of spiritual sickness do we have? It all stems from our origins. It's the brand of Cain that exists upon the American people, Cindy, that comes from, you know, everything we have in this country, we stole. Now, I'm sorry if Bill O'Reilly doesn't like that, but it's true.
We feel it, and we liquidated human beings to have it, too. We liquidated races of human beings.
Yeah. And so as a consequence, we constantly have to remind ourselves that we are good. And in the 21st century in the United States, we largely remind ourselves that we are good by picking out a certain element of our society and saying, see how bad they are. One in 99 people are in a prison in this country, Cindy. How many of them are in there for drug offense? Oh, they altered their minds.
Well, I know.
I mean,
I know.
I'm not advocating for the use of drugs.
You know, Bob, you can't have a police state without your people living in fear. And you can't have your people living in fear unless you have the capacity to lock them up or kill them. And that's why they opened up all of those old military bases in the middle of our country and put barbed wire around them and put cells in them.
And hired Halliburton or Wackenhut or whom the hell ever to come in and turn them into emergency alien detention centers.
Yeah, that's so that if George Bush decides to drop a nuclear bomb on Iran and some other country decides to come in and put a stop to it, he can lock up all the dissenters. Anybody that thinks he's wrong goes to jail.
Oh, look at the FBI program that gives right to shoot and right to kill to American corporations. Yeah, and I mean, yeah, this isn't something from Alex Jones or cockamamie stuff like that.
No,
this is real live, honest to God, exposed.
I've seen it on the Portland News.
Yeah.
They have Saturday exercises where business people come out, and they pretend that there's an emergency, and they pretend to put people in ambulances and all this, and they, you know, pretend that there was a terrorist attack. And what they're doing is they're practicing so that they can come out and clear the deck and own the day. And they're all armed, and they all have permission to shoot at other citizens if they're perceived to be terrorists during a so-called terrorist event that, of course, would be called by Dick Cheney or George Bush, you know. Yeah, and they have shoot-to-kill orders, clearance to shoot-to-kill.
And it dovetails with something else that was exposed in the Deep South, I believe, out of Louisiana, Cindy, and that is that there's another program that sort of runs parallel to this business program, and I can't remember the name of the business program now. Somebody will tell me in the chat room. But there's a program in the South where the FBI or Homeland Security or some other equally creepy agency comes in and co-opts the clergy. This is, after all, prayer meeting Wednesday. They come in and co-opt the clergy to, you know, tell people, calm down, be obedient. Jesus wants you to obey the government.
Don't
obey
worry
Jesus.
Just Armageddon. Yeah.
Yeah, so it all...
Well, Hitler did that, too, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. In my community down here, we live in a small town, too. This is a pretty small town. And we're just all working people out here, not much different than the folks where you're at. You know, everybody works at the paper mill, or they work, let's see, there's a paper mill and there's a lumber yard, and then there's the various stores that are supported by those jobs, and then a few commuters and maybe some guys that are truck drivers that, you know, when they're not out on the road, they live here. And that pretty well makes up the type of community that I live in. And they had to bring in a Homeland Security SWAT team with military armored personnel carriers and tanks to our local, and they put in buildings, and they built a local National Guard post in our town so that we could be protected against the drug offenders.
Yeah.
They have a helicopter, too. They're zooming through the hills here looking for marijuana.
Yeah, but of course, you know, that sort of ignores, and that's the way it is with our government, because it's not about the war on drugs. It's not about the drugs. It's about the Republicans are always talking about, you start another social program, then all you got to do is, then you just forever pouring money into it. But they don't talk about things like the DEA. And the DEA has become, for instance, a self-perpetuating excuse for its own survival. No matter how much we learn about something like marijuana, no matter how much we learn about its positive effects, no matter how much we learn about the usefulness of non-psychoactive hemp, the DEA is still out. Oh, we need a budget increase. Oh, we've got a war on drugs going on here.
Well, that's exactly what this Homeland Security is all about. It's all these security and this whole bugaboo boogeyman story is nothing more than a full-time employment opportunity for cops and bullies. You know, the bullies of our society need something to do, and they need a paycheck for it.
We've got a trial going on in Beckley, West Virginia right now. I've been following it every day in the online version of the paper because I won't give them my money. And it centers on a cop who was out with his crack whore girlfriend. And I'm not trying to be mean to her. She just is one. I mean, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they were out late at night drinking, and, you know, she went, hey, baby, let's party. And so he goes out looking for some crack, and they get to the one dude who says, yeah, I can hook you up with the other dude. And the other dude comes out and to make the deal, and the guy's and basically what the cop's going to do, he flashes his badge and says, and now you're going to jail. And he's drunk. His blood alcohol content is 0.07. And what he was going to do is rip off the crack dealer for his crack whore girlfriend and get the bust at the same time.
Yeah.
And so the dealer pulls out a pistol and, you know, and unloads into him and kills him.
Mm-hmm.
And the defendant, the alleged shooter, and he kind of admits he was the shooter, but he says, you know, the guy was going to rob me.
Yeah, self-defense.
And he's having to wear a shock collar at his trial.
Oh, that's cute.
He hasn't been proven to be violent. He hasn't been proven to be engaged in any outbursts.
But he's a dangerous Negro.
So he has to wear a shock collar so that the jury can be constantly reminded that he's dangerous and violent.
Well, I wish that people in this country who like to use drugs for recreation or to soothe their shattered nerves or whatever reason, I wish that people who use drugs in this country would stop and think for just a minute. If they could just stop it and stop all the drug activity in this country, we could bankrupt those people in D.C. because they're the ones that are collecting on it all. That's half of our economy, Bob. Half of our economy is drugs. It's underground. It's not talked about, but it's one of the reasons why this country has not prospered, because there's been more energy diverted into drug activities and drug law enforcement and the whole drug scene. Half of our country's wealth and activities have been focused on this, and anything that would have put us into the space race or technology or the future of medicine or the education of our youth or traveling the world or cultural activities or beauty or living or the quality of life, that's all been sacrificed to the drug god. You know, the drug god and the cops are the king of the drug god story. And if that isn't enough, then they got to have the international Al-CIA story going on.
Yeah.
Which, after a thorough investigation, the
it turns FBI out to be a bunch of hooey.
Did not admit. Yeah. That to every Republican I could think of today.
God, you know, and the what's so frustrating out of this, Cindy, is this is solvable stuff. This isn't rocket science.
But we have to clear the deck to solve it. We cannot solve it with these people in our way.
No.
Hasn't that been proven? 50 years has gone by and we haven't solved the thing because we keep putting Republicans in office and they keep blocking our progress. You know?
Yeah.
They all but announced that we can't do a darn thing that's good for America because we're a bunch of pinko commie left-wing, you know, retards or something. You know, they've been calling us names for 50 years, and I'm sick to death of it.
Oh,
they haven't
that's the
done
truth.
Such a good job, have they?
No, not at all.
They've pretty well mucked up the whole country. We're going off a cliff. Maybe it's going to take a complete collapse of our economy and an all-out global depression to get rid of these people. You know, maybe it has to go down that far to clean the decks. You leave one of them standing and it's make life, you know? Isn't that what General Custer said?
Yeah.
Well, that's how I see them.
Yeah.
It's a terrible way to feel, but...
It's a terrifying thing.
It doesn't terrify me anymore. I'm sick to death of it.
No, it's terrifying for me because of who bears the brunt of it. Yeah, I got grandkids on the ground now, and
wow.
And I'm sorry. I don't mean to just beat that like or drag that like a little red wagon, but that's who gets to go to this party. The collapse party.
I know it. Well, if it happens, we can't stop it. If it's on its way and it's going to happen, we can't stop it. We really can't. And if it happens, here's a good thought. The people that came out of it the first time around, namely my grandparents, were wonderful people. They were really good, hard-working people who cared about their neighbors, knew how to take care of themselves. I'm sure that your grandparents were the same way. Living in a depression, growing up in a depression, did not hurt my parents one bit. It made them good people. And maybe our country's just a little too rich and our people are a little too spoiled. That's why we have these lazy, stupid generations who want their Pac-Mans. It used to be a Pac-Man, but now it's an iPod. They want their iPhones and their iPods and their fancy cars more than they want the country.
And they can't, and they can't live in a world that doesn't have all of that.
No.
Because they require, again, this goes back to the origins of our conversation, Cindy, they require constant
stimulation.
Stimulation, exactly.
Right. And I think it starts from the very ground when you constantly stimulate a child and say, oh, you're the most beautiful, you're the most wonderful, here, dance for me. You have a house party and you bring the kids out, dance for them. Look at how gorgeous my baby is. Isn't that the most beautiful, gorgeous, wonderful kid you ever saw in your life? Day in and day out, day in and day out, a kid hears that. And when they become an adult, they require that. They require it. And if somebody isn't stroking them, then they usually go to drugs and stroke themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
hey,
I've seen it 100,000 times.
Oh, I know. And,
it's the end of the show, isn't it, Bob?
Yeah, we've kind of run up against it. What a wonderful conversation, though, Cindy. I don't hear from you very often. Mostly it's just email. And,
yeah.
You know, I love you. I love your ability to well, this is what this is designed for. This is what can't happen on commercial radio.
This is really great, and I guess I touched all the bases.
I think you did. I think it qualifies as a home run.
Okay, well, I'll let you go, Bob. Let you do your sign-off thing, and howdy to all the listeners. I hope bending your ear was an enjoyable thing.
Oh, it was. It was an absolute joy for me, and I'm pretty sure the chat room enjoyed it, too, and all the folks who will listen to it later when it's live on a podcast.
Okay.
All right, take care, Cindy. Give our best to Steve. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And one more before we go. Hi, who have I got?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Carla.
No, no. Diana.
Oh, Diana. Okay, my bad.
Well, I haven't.
Every now and then I miss a call. Every now and then I miss an identification. But you and Carla sound a little bit alike.
Well, I'm kind of thrilled you even recognize my voice. But I just wanted to call and comment on that marvelous call that I feel like now I've interrupted. But Cindy was really a great call.
You know, I love doing that with the show once in a while, Diana, because it's. I think it's what we're built for.
She's a great person. She is a caring, and you can tell that she has a world of experience to bring to everything she, you know, is involved with, and a very compassionate sounding lady. And I didn't know that you had a huge garden.
Well, it's big enough for me to work, and I think my son-in-law and I'll have a lot of fun in it this summer. I look forward to it because it's the best exercise that I can get.
Yeah, I relate, Cindy, because I'm starting to feel the effects. I'm 58, and I'm starting to feel the effects of arthritis. And when you were talking about spicy foods, I didn't know that could help. That helps arthritis?
Yeah.
Really?
I think it's the capsaicin that has some. Well, I know it does. I know it does because there's an over-the-counter medication out there called Zostrix. That's made with capsaicin extractives. That's good. Good for joint inflammation.
Oh, good. Well, I'll look into that because it kind of pisses me off that I have all this arthritis pain. It's not that bad, but it's getting in my way.
Yeah, it's just enough to annoy the dickens out of you.
Yeah, and then I run to the ibuprofen and pop a couple of those. But I don't like having to do that. But, hey, I wanted to mention to you before it's time to cut off here. Did you hear about the five American workers over in Iraq that had their fingers sent in the mail to the hostages?
Was it four Americans and one Austrian or five Americans
right.
and one Austrian, something like
yeah,
that?
I heard about that on Rachel Maddow's show because I listened to her. And then I thought, I'm going to look it up on the Internet, and I didn't really find too much, but I didn't know if you guys had been talking about it at all.
I didn't mention it, but it's an interesting story because the Americans, at least, were all so-called security contractors
right.
for a Kuwaiti-based security company called Crescent Security or something, and they were kidnapped during a 43-vehicle convoy.
Right.
In late 2000, was it 6 or 7?
6.
Yeah.
November of 2006, I think it said.
It's pathetic. It's pathetic, but it's but it's also an example, Diana, of what happens when you take things that should be military functions and you turn them over to the private sector so that the so-called private sector can make a fast buck on blood and guts and death.
And you don't know what these kids, most of them are young guys who didn't really have much probably in the way of any security experience at all, and they get thrown into this maelstrom and think they're going to make this big money, and they're all the pictures on their website that they have, a family website, they all are smiling, beautiful faces. And it just breaks your heart, really, it does, even though, you know, I at first felt that those guys were too greedy to go over there. They weren't thinking straight, but of course they weren't thinking straight. They were thinking of the money, and maybe they were from West Virginia where they're blowing up the mountains and they didn't have a job, you know. And so they felt like they had to support their families. Who knows where they're from?
I don't think Diana that we will be able to fully calculate the butcher's bill for what George W. Bush created in Iraq for a generation.
Did you see him singing the other night?
Oh yeah, I ran the audio.
Oh,
and
God, my husband and I were just ready to throw something at the TV. The loathing and the shame that we feel towards what he's done, we're feeling that. And he feels nothing except to sit up there and laugh and dance and sing.
And slap the American people in the face, exactly.
Diana,
I'm so glad you called in, but I've got to roll out because Peter Godbold's on his way.
I love you up here in Olympia.
Well, thank you very kindly, and we're so glad you share your time with us.
Okay, dear. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. It is true, on his way with Strictly Confidential is Peter Godbold. Coming up, Peter has a guest this evening that you will find scintillating and interesting in the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program. Also coming up tonight, the Horn Section at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, and All Foxed Up with John Fox coming your way at midnight Eastern Time. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, and thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, as well as Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. If the horn matters to you, what happens at WhiteRoseSociety.org matters to you, because Ben makes all the streams do all the things that streams are supposed to do. Many thanks to all the hard-working, dedicated members of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, who are happy to partially sponsor all of the programs here on the Horn. Be part of the solution. Be part of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 124 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively right here on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch is located at crmw.net. That's crmw.net. Please have a look and see what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Today is Wednesday, March the 12th, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. on a Wednesday, Eastern Time, March the 12th, you're indeed listening to a live show, and you are more than welcome to call into the show and participate with myself and with the guest, whom I'll be introducing shortly. I'll be giving out those numbers soon. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find our chat room, which is active as I speak, and it's a good evening to stop by the chat room. There are lots of folks there. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com also to the main Head On Radio Network site. You can find out about all the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network right there, of which I'm only a very small part. There are links on strictlyconfidentialradio.com for the Strictly Confidential MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. You can participate via chat or via email. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. That's Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the mail during the breaks. Or you can call toll-free, 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON or 877-443-2366 if you prefer digits. If you have unlimited long distance, you can use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333. That is 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia. But we are certainly pleased to pick up the freight if you'd like to use the toll-free line. Again, that is 877-443-2366. Oh, my goodness, the joys of live radio. So many things go on behind the scenes that you folks just don't know about. Bob and I were having a last-minute panic there, just seconds before the Strictly Confidential theme was about to run. The internet was all gone, went down, no way. Everything went out. So with the emergency reset,